The views expressed on the previous programs are those of the host, guests,
pretty zany,
and callers. They do not reflect those of the Beasley Broadcast Group, its staff, advertisers, or agencies.
The biggest names, the best talent.
How about those fish?
All right.
560 WQAM.
Don't get carried away, man.
Fort Lauderdale.
Are they going to get carried away?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Game football, they listen to Sports Radio 560 QAM. But when they want the true taste of real beer, there's only one choice. Presidente Imported Beer. Join Dave and Buster's at Dolphin Mall and Presidente Beer as they team up to bring you exciting University of Miami College football viewing parties all season long. Only at Dave and Buster's, featuring great Presidente beer specials like a bucket of five ice-cold bottles of Presidente.
Neil got out! WQAM. Where the faggot is.
Absolutely.
This is Dan Rather, formerly of CBS Evening News, now of something called HDNet, where you can see every freaking pockmark in my face. But it's the only gig I could get, so be it. Anyway, you may have heard that some girl has taken my spot on the CBS Evening News. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, you know it's Katie Couric. I've only met Katie once. She spat upon me. Not on purpose, perhaps, but she pops her peas, and when she does, spit flies in every direction. Let's just hope the cameramen are wearing sneeze shields. Do not take my complete and total honesty for bitterness. Well, okay, take it for bitterness. They put me out to pasture. And Katie Couric sits there in my
Wait
chair
a minute.
With my
bud. One moment,
print.
Please.
What happened? Fire alarm?
What is that?
What is what?
How about now?
And says, we're going to give you a different way to look at the news. Well, Katie, I'm here to tell you, that's how I wound up working for HDNet. I say stick to the facts. Short of that, lose your top and pierce your nipples because you ain't got a prayer. Here's hoping Brian Williams grabs you by the feet and eats you like a shrimp. Dan Rather reporting, formerly of CBS News. Now catch me on HDNet sometime between 1 and 3 in the morning. Christ.
What a great start to the week that was. Was that on the air? Was I?
No, that was not on the air.
Oh,
that was just Josh messing
Left
with you
your
there.
Return on. That's all. It's
oh,
Monday.
Oh, great. I'm here in a boat camper. How's it going, Tommy? And a bunch of four-letter words. They didn't say any four. Well, maybe they did. Here's the facts from Jim in England. Can I suggest another choice for your poll?
No.
Jolly well good. No, you can't. Take a poll only whenever a new topical issue comes up, and he says you could take more than one a day. Oh. Do I have the Elton John story wanting religion banned? Yes, I do, Jim. And then his poll suggestion, who's the greatest Muslim in the world?
Wow.
Woo! You like that one? And some of his suggestions are Muhammad Ali, Yusuf Islam, Cat Stevens, and then the guy that the headbutting guy. What was his name? Zidane, whatever it was.
Zinedine Zidane.
Hello, this is Albert Kaida from Taliban Records.
Yeah. At any rate, thanks a lot, Jim. Have a jolly good day and get lost. Anyway, there's Oprah. She's at this Martin Luther King Day, not Memorial Day. They're honoring it. And Bubba was there a little while ago speaking, and Barack Obama's going to speak. And now they got Oprah speaking.
Power. That benign power.
Oh, my God. You know, that should tell you all you need to know about what's wrong with the world. The fact that anybody is supposed to take this bitch seriously. I mean, just take all that money right to the bank and just go off and have a wonderful life and, you know, binge eat. Eat a lot. Till you bust. This is a very depressing story. Should we start out the week on depressing? How about those Dolphins?
Ow!
Did they turn the corner or what?
No.
They suck. Patriots missed the team bus to the stadium again yesterday, and it's not good.
Yeah. It's nice to see Tom fail every once in a while. It's good.
And Josh's team didn't lose yesterday. That's because they didn't play yet till tonight, when they'll lose to nothing could be finer than losing Carolina. The Bucks suck. So who put the S in J-E-T-S, the Jets suck? That was very bad. Anyway, it's football. You know, who the hell cares? You people get all whipped up. Oh, we're going to kick your ass. How about this Hurricane? 5-5. How do you like that? Can you believe that? I can't believe that the Orange Bowl is still standing. Wouldn't you have thought they would have pulled it apart brick by brick, turlet by turlet?
It's still standing.
I'm still standing. That's what Miss Elton's saying. And she says the religion ought to be banned. It's another
gay
thing. Anyway, wait till you hear the story from Lake Wales. Did you hear about this guy? In fact, what was the movie? It was Fargo.
Yeah.
The Stump Grinder. That's about the only place I've ever seen a stump grinder in a movie.
Oh, the
wood chipper. I saw Match Point over the weekend and
yes.
thought it was great.
Yes. Two thumbs up something.
Okay. Yeah, I know Scarlett Johansson.
Okay.
Lake Wales, Florida. A man tried to save a dog being pulled into a stump grinder, was caught in the machine and killed, authorities say. Robert J. Wagner, 25, I'm sure no relation to the Hollywood Bob Wagner, and his friend John Santilli of Port St. Lucie were using the grinder while at a hunting camp in the River Ranch area about 9:40 yesterday morning, said Polk County Sheriff spokeswoman Donna Wood. Santilli's dog got entangled when the animal's leash got caught in the machine, Wood said. Wagner tried to rescue the six-month-old Weimaraner, but was pulled into the machine's blades. He died of lacerations and major head and body trauma, Wood said. Deputies had to use a four-wheel drive vehicle to get to the scene. Wagner and the dog were dead by the time authorities got there. In the old wood chipper, the stump grinder.
Those are two different things for what it's worth.
Isn't it the same principle?
Well, they both have blades on the inside, but one machine is a wood chipper and the other one is a stump grinder.
They got mini blades on the inside and brine blades on the outside. Now, that's bad. Bad taste. Don't be starting that again. Somewhere out there, somebody in this community knows who did that murder last week, that football player. Somebody knows. Somebody's on the loose. There's a killer on the loose. I still can't get over that. That was just, I don't know, it just leaves me limp. Anyway, speaking of dead people, the Shiite Prime Minister promised yesterday to reshuffle his cabinet after calling lawmakers disloyal. This, of course, is in Baghdad, and blaming Sunni Muslims for raging sectarian violence that claimed at least 159 more lives, including 35 men blown apart while waiting to join Iraq's police force. Blown apart to pieces. Among the unusually high number of dead were 50 bodies found behind a regional electrical company in Bakuba, 35 miles northeast of Baghdad, and 25 others found scattered throughout the capital. When they say scattered, they mean it literally scattered. And Baghdad's morgues are full. No room at the inn. With no space to store bodies, some victims of these sectarian slaughter are not being kept for relatives to claim, but photographed, numbered, and quickly interred in government cemeteries. Men fearful of an anonymous burial are tattooing their thighs with names and phone numbers. Wow, what a way to make friends, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to write your name and phone number on a wall in a tea room somewhere. It's another thing to write it on your thigh. Men fearful of, let me say it again, in October, a especially bloody month for Iraqi civilians, about 1,600 bodies were turned in at the Baghdad Central Morgue. The city's network of morgues, built to hold 130 bodies at most, now holds more than 500. Bodies are sent for burial every 3 to 4 days just to make room for the daily intake, sometimes making corpse identification impossible. We can't remove all the bodies just so that one can be identified, then pull them all back in again, they said. We just don't have the staff. How do you like that? They're dying like flies over there. And now we got Bob Gates, B. Gates.
It's worth it.
Is going to solve it all.
Yeah.
Here's the poll from Friday. How many of your friends and or family listen to Neil? And this was not a good weekend to take a poll anyway because everybody was out of town for the extra day. Let's see. The holiday was Friday. Here it's today. People don't have to work today like, you know, bank people, government employees. It's a holiday day. It's a Remembrance Day. And they're walking around. They got the red poppies on their lapel. You have your poppy on?
Not on.
Well, I poppy.
I have it in.
How many of your friends and or family listen to Neil? 1,907 votes. A few, 700. Few. Well, that's good. Zero, none, zippity-doo-dah, 477. Speaking of zippity-doo-dah, Dan Rather was on with Imus this morning. That's what. Oh, and I got a great Katie Couric story from this week's Inquirer. Now, it all depends on whether you want to believe the front page or the inside story. I'll get to it. Because the front page says, Katie fired it. How do you like that?
Hmm.
Anyway, how many of your friends or family listen to Neil? 0,477. Almost none, 432. Most, 103. Some, 79. That was George's choice, some, which I guess a few wasn't good enough for George. Some.
Right.
All of them, 42. I hit this poll, only 41, just 2.1%. And only my enemies listen, 33. Only my enemies listen. Well, there's your president.
I appreciate the members of my cabinet who are here.
Did you see him look up there? There's planes flying over, and he looked up like, oh, they're coming to get me. 787 votes on today's poll. I think 1,000 is safe for us today. What's your take? We're taking a poll on polls today. What's your take on these polls? I'm kind of shocked, aren't you?
About what?
About their response so far.
No.
Out of 787 votes, 595, almost 76% say they're fine. How do you like that?
Oh, we're fine.
You would have said what?
That's what I voted.
Yeah, that's because I'm the one that has to come up with them every damn day, you
right?
jackass.
I would have voted for whatever if that option had been on there, but it wasn't.
Well, what does that mean?
Whatever. Like, I don't care.
But you don't care about anything. If we got 4,000 votes on the poll,
I care about the ratings.
50,000 votes, you wouldn't care.
Right.
About what?
Ratings, not web hits.
Ratings? What the hell are those?
Well, we know what those are.
There he goes again, picking on our lead-in. I can't believe you. Somewhere out there, there's a killer. Anyway, they're fine, 595. Once a week is good, 81. I hate this poll, 42, 5.3%. Hate the poll on polls. I shouldn't have even put that on there. I'm so tired of those bastards.
If you don't like it, go vote something else.
Go get lost.
Elsewhere.
Go stick your head in the wood chipper, okay? In the stump grinder. Go grind your stump. I hate this poll 42. They suck. These polls suck 37. And get rid of them 32. Not that much negativity when you come to the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They suck and get rid of them only 32. And that's because they want us to have to work and come up with a poll idea. They're sadists. That's what it's all about. Oh, yeah, they're great. So Elton John says organized religion fuels anti-gay discrimination and other forms of bias, said in an interview published this weekend. I think religion has always tried to turn hatred toward gay people, John said in the Observer newspaper's Music Monthly magazine. Religion promotes the hatred and spite against gays, he said.
You fairy!
But there are so many people I know who are gay and love the religion, he said. From my point of view, I would ban religion completely. Organized religion doesn't seem to work. It turns people into really hateful lemmings, and it's not really compassionate. Oh, no, Schmidt. Elton also criticized religious leaders for failing to do anything about conflicts around the world. Why aren't they having a conclave? Why aren't they coming together? John said that those in his own field have been similarly lax. It's like the peace movement in the 60s. Musicians got through to people by getting out there and doing peace concerts, but we don't seem to do them anymore, he said. If John Lennon were alive today, he'd be leading it with a vengeance if poor John was with us. Pop hat John, we got Yoko.
Oi!
That's what we need, Benny. With or without the JETS Jets. Boy, that was depressing, you know, and rain and monk. Let's blame the weather for the Patriots sinking the joint out yesterday, although both teams played in the same crappy weather. But nevertheless, maybe they're just not that good. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Well, probably. Like the Dolphins, man, two in a row they beat the Mighty Bears and the Inconsistent with a Dolphin reject at quarterback, Damon Heward. I mean, that's a joke.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, he is the backup. I mean,
he makes Joey Harrington look good. Well, Trent Green, man, he can play on my team. Not only does he play good, but he looks pretty good, too, for an old guy. 810 votes on the poll, and 613 of them say these polls are just fine. Don't mess with our polls.
Our biggest names, the best talent.
I think they suck. They're a pain.
Rogers,
pain where I
Sports
sit.
Radio 560 AM.
Yeah.
No.
MONDAY SUCKS.
I was attacked by the Pokemon. He went and maimed my friend Punjab. Oh no, I don't feel safe in India. Oh, I'd rather be in New York and drive a cab. Thank you, my friend. Thank you, my friend.
1017 at 560 WQAM, the use of medical marijuana has given two Toronto professors the right to do something that many students could only dream of. Access to specially ventilated rooms where they can indulge in peace. How you like that, George?
All right.
The two at the esteemed University of Toronto and York University, to the north of the city, suffer from chronic medical conditions that some doctors say can be eased by smoking marijuana. They're among nearly 1,500 Canadians who have won the right to use the drug for health reasons. Yeah. Using human rights... What?
I was going to say, I have that disease.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is, you got it. I believe that.
Suicidal tendencies.
Now, I have a feeling I know who you got
it's good
it
for,
too.
It.
Using human rights legislation, the two petitioned their employers for the right to light up in the workplace. They faced a legal struggle, but the universities eventually agreed. Mon. Without the medication, I'm disabled. I'm not able to carry out meaningful and valuable productive work, said York University criminology professor Brian McLean, who suffers from a severe form of degenerative arthritis. It helps me maintain my mobility as a physical problem, but also helps me keep the pain at a distance so I can focus on my work, McLean told Reuters. McLean's three-month battle to persuade York University to provide a light-up room, finally obtained this month, is short in comparison to University of Toronto philosophy professor Doug Hutchinson's year-long struggle. It took Professor McLean a season, three full months, to get similar accommodations, and I believe that in Canada now, we should hope the next person who gets the accommodation should not take more than a month, Hutchinson told Reuters. How do you like that, huh? Those of you in the fascist USA, but nevertheless. Well, speaking of the USA, the U.S. government believes Fidel Castro's health is deteriorating and the Cuban dictator is unlikely to live through next year.
Incredible.
How do you like that?
Yeah, whatever.
He's got terminal cancer. Terminal, baby. Terminal. That dire view was reinforced last week when the Cuban foreign minister backed away from his prediction that the ailing Castro would return to power by early next month, diciembre. It's a subject on which I don't want to speculate, Felipe Perez Roque told the AP in Havana. He don't want to speculate. U.S. government officials say there's still some mystery about Castro's diagnosis, his treatment, and how he's responding, but these officials believe the 80-year-old fascist, communista, whatever the hell he is, leader, has cancer of the stomach, colon, or pancreas. He was seen weakened and thinner in official state photos released late last month, and it's considered unlikely he'll return to power survive through the end of next year. It goes to show you what happens when you eat too many of those refried beans. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they weren't authorized to speak publicly about the politically sensitive topic and they value their lives. With chemotherapy, Castro may live up to 18 months, said the defense official. Without it, expected survival dropped to 3 to 8 months. He's going to be dead soon. Castro's dead soon. American officials won't publicly talk about how they glean clues to Castro's health, but U.S. spy agencies include physicians who study pictures, video, public statements, and other information coming out of Cuba. Maybe Bill Fist has been studying the pictures like he was of Terry and her.
Chew!
Remember that? He was diagnosed on a camera. Oh, she looks really alert and awake to me. Look at that. She just, the balloon just flew right by her head there. Terry Schiavo and her famous.
Cube!
Oh, man, I'll tell you. Look at all these episodes in Florida. First it was Alienito and the Hanging Chads, and then we had Terry and her.
Cube!
Oh, where the hell does it stop?
It doesn't.
840 votes on the poll, by the way. We could be up to 1,000 and then three shakes of a lamb's tail. I think QAM ought to have a smoking room.
Amen.
People in the station want to light up. Not cigarettes or cigars or...
I know just the room.
What room would that be?
This one right here. Yeah, the one I'm sitting in, of course.
I've got the current issue. What's the date on this? November 20th. November 20th. Boy, they're a little ahead, ain't they? National Enquirer. And the front cover is enough to make you puke your guts out when you see Kirstie Alley... Her secret liposuction, the real story of her weight loss, 75 pounds gone. And there's the before and after. And the before, man, she is one nasty, skanky-looking cow. Wow. But and on top of the headline, Dog the Bounty Hunter is a crack addict. Reese's $100 million divorce turns ugly. Well, speaking of that, guess what movie was on last night, which I watched parts of it again. Speaking of Reese Witherspoon, not with her, but 54.
Oh, okay.
With her very hot husband, Ryan Phillippe, who used to be Ryan Phillippe. Whatever the hell his name is. Yeah, he actually talked with a kind of a straight accent in that movie, too, when he came right down to him. I don't care if he says anything. Just shut up and, you know. Anyway, her divorce turns ugly. The drugs, the affairs, and the cruelty. Oh, no. We're not going to be picking on poor Ryan Phillippe, are we? But the big story on here, Katie fired. Enquirer World Exclusive, the secret meeting that cost Anchor her job. And then when you get to the article, as you'll see when I get to it, if I ever get around, she may be fired. The headline says, fired is in past tense. Oh, look at the centerfold here. Drug craze Naomi Campbell beat me bloody. Oh, no. That's what her former Formula One racing team boss, Flavio Briatore, says in Cannes. Beat me bloody. I guess that's who he said. I don't know. I didn't read it. I don't care about Naomi Campbell or anybody, any of these other drug-crazed idiots. New battle for Farrah. There she is looking really bad again. She's dying. She's on the way out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you see, Jack Palance died over the weekend.
Yes, he did. I think in honor of that, you should watch Shane again.
Oh, jeez.
You never saw it.
The hell I didn't.
All right.
With little Brandon DeWilders in it. He's like 9 years old in that movie, yeah. Anyway, Gary Cooper was in that, right? It's a Western. It's a cowboy movie.
Alan Ladd, I think, but I'm not sure.
Well, I don't watch cowboy movies, okay?
I understand.
Ever since Roy Rogers and Gabby Hayes went off TV, which is, 100 years ago, I don't watch cowboy movies. I don't watch Westerns, whether they're spaghetti Westerns, although I do like my low-carb pasta. You want to hear the story about Katie? Katie out? It's not much of a story.
Yeah, sure.
Secret meeting that cost Anchor her job. News gal could end up on 60 Minutes, early show. And then, if you read the article, it's like, what are we talking about here? It says, Katie Couric could be fired from her new $50 million a year job, the Enquirer has learned exclusively. In top secret meetings, her bosses at the CBS Evening News have drawn up contingency plans to remove the 49-year-old former Today star from the anchor chair. Better put her in the electric chair, that bitch. If the perky newscast remains in last place in the news ratings war, she'll be replaced, say sources. The sources are looking at several options, including moving her to 60 Minutes or the early show, the real early show. When they move you to the real early show, that means that they want you out. Katie trails both Brian Williams at NBC and Charlie Gibson at ABC, and the prospect of her overtaking her competitors look grim, confide sources. It's looking really grim. What it boils down to, says an insider, is that she could be fired and not even know it, whatever that means. A close source added, there's absolute panic now that this was a bad mistake that needs to be fixed. I would have told him that for a consulting fee of nothing. The stunning development comes on the heels of the Enquirer's exclusive report that Katie's been emotionally devastated over her poor ratings. She blows. We've revealed that the chirpy news star is averaging no more viewers than 69-year-old veteran newsman Fuddy Duddy Bob Schieffer, her lower-paid interim predecessor, brought in after Dan Rather left, was shoved out of the anchor spot. See, this is God punishing CBS for caving into the neocons, okay, and for pushing old Danny Boy out. The Enquirer also disclosed that a desperate Katie turned to former NBC anchor Tom Brokaw for tips on news anchoring and politics. Behind the scenes, her bosses are incensed over comments that Katie made in which it appeared she didn't care if her broadcast remained in last place, divulged the insider. Katie's searing comment appeared in USA Today, October 30. She was quoted as saying her coming in and becoming number one was never an expectation by anyone at CBS News, and it shouldn't have been an expectation by anyone in the outside world. We didn't expect it. We knew she sucked and didn't belong there in the first place. Like a fish out of water, baby. Like taking your goldfish and sticking it in the living room floor, expecting it to run around a little bit for you. CBS bosses fear that her low ratings will hurt the primetime lineup that follows, confided the close source. To make matters worse, critics are circling like sharks. Veteran New York Newsday television writer Vern Gay said of the newscast, it isn't working. No kidding, Vern. Sounds awfully gay to me. Even former CBS anchorman Walter Cronkite offered his prescription, more hard news. Walter likes it hard. The network has tried to keep the national spotlight on its new anchor. In Katie's first 6 weeks behind the anchor desk, CBS News female correspondents received 40% fewer assignments than they did under Schieffer, according to an industry publication. Katie seems to be getting hit from every direction, getting criticism for hogging the spotlight, refusing to travel, and her soft news approach to the insider. She's too freaking soft, that bitch. The important sweeps rating period is upon them now. In their secret meetings, the network bosses decided Katie is fired if she can't bring the broadcast up to at least second place. Did you notice the tense of that? She is fired if she can't bring it up to at least second.
It's like Glengarry Glen Ross. You're all fired unless,
Right, it's kind of like the worst team with Greg and Joe Rose. However, a CBS spokeswoman insists Katie's doing great. Everybody here is very excited about our progress since we're the only evening newscast that's up while the others are down. But a studio insider concluded, while everyone is hoping for a miracle, it's going downhill fast. Good and well-deserved, okay, but a bunch of idiots putting her on there. I mean, just totally unqualified, totally out of place, and fits like a glove in your nostril, in your earlobe. You know those big rubber gloves that Ron Popeil sends you if you buy one of his tchotchkes there?
No.
Those big rubber gloves that they stamp out like for about a half a penny a pair?
No.
867 votes. You better get with Ron Popeil, mister. He's your good buddy that sent you that really neat pasta machine that I'm sure you threw away a long time ago like I did with mine.
Yes.
Hey, how'd you like that nice short redrawn, huh?
I was supposed to tell you about that.
Like on a real radio station. Apparently Jesse liked to play. He's a bigger hound than Richard Bay. Now all the papers say
Jesse's got a love child, yeah.
You put the baby in me, Jesse.
Will divorce papers be filed, yeah.
Hey, you play, you pay.
Life's hit spicy, not mild, yeah. He's in trouble, it would seem.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You in trouble now, Jesse.
A big part of Clinton's team.
Hey.
Yeah. This was not MLK's dream.
Ooh, damn, I'm hungry, Jesse.
Hang around the Oval Office with his hoochie girl.
I mean, for two now, Rick.
Expensive suit and brand new Jerry curl.
Ooh, baby, you get a little bit fat.
In the limo, he gave her word.
You be touching me without me.
It makes you wanna hurt. Jesse's got a love child, yeah.
Got the body, baby, some shoes.
Will divorce papers be filed, yeah.
He'd be running around in raggy shoes.
He likes it spicy, not mild, yeah.
I'm gonna need some more money.
He's in trouble, it would seem.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Give me some of that Reverend money.
A big part of Clinton's team.
Come on, Jesse.
Yeah. Leading with his balance beam.
Ooh.
Yeah.
More like a toothpick.
This was not MLK's dream.
I'm hungry, baby.
That's what we all want, a little something-something, baby. In fact, I'm looking for that story about Ryan Philippe and Reese Witherspoon. Not that I give a crap about her, but nevertheless. And I told you Bob Barker's out. And you guys wouldn't believe me. Bob Barker is going to the dogs and couldn't be happier. The Price is Right host, who's calling it quits in June 2007, wants to spend the rest of his life involved with animal causes and being surrounded by loved ones. Isn't that sweet?
Go on.
After a number of health scares, the soon-to-be 83-year-old realized that all work and no play doesn't make him happy and decided to step down as the most familiar face on TV. It was the hardest decision Bob has ever made, a close source revealed, but Bob has spent 50 years in TV, 35 of them hosting The Price is Right. You know, he used to be on Truth or Consequences.
Okay.
Now he's ready to devote more of his time to leisure activities and caring for his menagerie of pets. Bob is going to pour whatever energy he has left into volunteering for animal rights causes and probably bang in some of those Barker's beauties there from The Price is Right without getting sued. Barker's had his ups and downs. He's weathered several lawsuits in the 90s brought by hostesses of the show, with one alleging he sexually harassed her ass. He also underwent surgery to unclog a blocked artery in 99, knee surgery in 2000, and prostate surgery in 2002. All of these things. Bob used to be able to balance the show with his private life, said the source. Now he craves more time to himself. The health scares really help put him life and work in perspective. Yada, yada, yada. For crying out loud, he's got millions and millions and millions.
I know.
Good God. In fact, why not send us a little something-something instead of giving them to all them animules? Oh, speaking of dogs, dog is a crackhead.
How about that?
It says, instead of walking the straight and narrow, eyewitnesses claim Dwayne Chapman is breaking the law. And here's a picture of the dog. It says, I've seen him so messed up he couldn't get to his office to film his TV show, says one source. And here's a picture of a typical crack pipe. I didn't know there was such a thing as a typical crack pipe. Dog is a crackhead. Bounty hunter spends up to $2,000 a month. $2,000 a month on crack, and you guys, he ain't sending you a little something-something that you both could probably use.
Damn.
Dwayne Dog Chapman is a crackhead, several eyewitness sources have exclusively told the Inquirer. The mullet-haired felon chaser has been smoking crack cocaine since at least 1995, say the eyewitnesses, and spent up to $2,000 a month on drugs. That's more than even George spends. Well, almost. And one of the most blatant examples of celebrity hypocrisy ever, Dog urges the lawbreakers he collars on his hit A&E show, Dog the Bounty Hunter, to go straight and kick drugs while he gets higher than a kite. Sounds like Limbaugh to me, Pill Pop and Rush. Isn't that what it sounds like? Like a hypocrite. Dwayne Chapman is a phony. I know because I'm his crack dealer, tattooed blonde Linda Heigl, who's been selling drugs to Chapman since March 2005, told the Inquirer. She ought to know. She's the dealer. I've sold crack to him, smoked crack with him more than 100 times, and seen him so messed up he couldn't get to his orifice to film the damn TV show. Chapman's former girlfriend, Delaney Duncan, also claimed she smoked crack with him in 1995, and again in Denver in 2005. Dog is a cokehead. He snorts it, smokes it, and he eats it, Delaney told the Inquirer. He's eaten it. He way overdoes it, and he can't get enough. Once I refused to give him any more drugs because I thought he was going to die, she said. He was saying,
I'm dying over here.
Sympathy poured out for Chapman, whose top-rated show is in its third season after federal agents recently arrested his ass for extradition to Mexico. But the night before his September 14th arrest, Linda says he bought $200 worth of crack from her, and he bought another $100 worth of crack from her before authorities hauled him off to jail the next day. The extradition case is now on hold, but in the months leading to his arrest, Chapman blew thousands of dollars on a wild drug spree. Dog bought about $2,000 worth of crack a month for me for a year. Year and a half, said Linda, who passed a polygraph test. Oh, there's Barack Obama speaking.
And the quotes on the wall together as the water falls like rain.
That's your nice president, by the way.
And at some point, I know that one of my daughters will ask, perhaps my youngest, Daddy, why is this monument here?
Manashtana halala hazeh, she'll say, and he'll say, what you be talking about, girl? Anyway, he's great. You don't like him as much as I do, but I'm telling you, he's the next
president.
Why would
you say that?
I don't know, just to bust
your I like him a lot.
Anyway, where is this? He'd usually buy crack for me once or twice a week for hundreds of dollars at a time. He'd pay in cash so his wife Beth wouldn't find out, said Linda. The first time we did business was in March 2005. Dwayne said he'd pay me $2,000 for a girl and drugs. I sold him 5 grams of crack, but he wasn't capable of having sex after we smoked it. Shockingly, Chapman smoked crack inside his Oahu, Hawaii home while his children were sleeping, according to Linda. How do you like that? Where my children sleep.
Better than smoking it while they're awake.
If the kids were getting up, he'd go into the bathroom. When his wife was sleeping, we smoked outside in his car or in the garden. Oh, in the garden. It's good for the plants. Smoking crack also triggered severe paranoia in Chapman, says Linda, who adds that he once spent 2 years in a Texas prison on murder charges. I think he needs the illusionist on there. What the hell's his name? Chris Rock Angel.
Mind freak.
The mind freak, yeah, or maybe just some other freak. Dwayne would think someone was filming him or recording him, said Linda. He'd run around the house checking the windows and doors to make sure they were locked. What's more, Chapman, who claims to be a born-again Christian, even got high before taping a show, according to Linda. He'd smoke all night before filming his TV show. Then he'd be too high to do the damn show, said Linda, who's moved from Hawaii to California to escape her druggy past. Beth would be calling, cursing, and saying, I've got 20 producers here waiting for Dwayne, but Dwayne wouldn't leave. He wanted to stay and keep smoking crack. I'd have to shove him into the shower, pour coffee down his throat, and get him to take a Valium to bring him down. Tawny Chapman, who was married to Dog in the early 90s, also said she witnessed his crack use firsthand.
Of its creed. Like Moses before him, he would never...
See, there you go, Barack Obama, he's just like Moses. Remember Moses, speaking of drugs?
Sure, holy Moses.
2 years after we separated, I went to his house after the kids were all home. When Dog opened the door, he was smoking a hit of crack, Tawny told the Inquirer. The pipe was in his hand. He said, mind your own business, and physically threw me down 6 steps into the yard. Dog is always talking about rehabilitating people on TV, but I know him for the phony he is. I can't stand his hypocrisy no more. He kind of reminds me of Dr. Phil, if that be the case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Phony baloney.
And Rush and all these others and that Reverend.
Yeah. Chapman even smoked crack, Reverend Ted. Even smoked crack with his son, Christopher, according to those close to the family. Now 37, Christopher's in a Colorado jail. Christopher told me he was smoking crack all the time with Dog in 96. He blames Dog for getting him hooked on crack, and so do I, said Gloria Hecht, who raised Christopher from the time he was 5. Chapman's ex-girlfriend, Delana, also confirmed the bounty hunter used drugs with Christopher. One time I picked Dog up at a hotel in Denver. He told me that he and Chris had been smoking crack for 5 days, said Delana, who also passed a polygraph test. When contacted by the Inquirer about claims by Linda, Delana, and Gloria that he smoked crack, Chapman said, they're all lying. Asked if he ever smoked crack, he answered, why would I tell you that? Then he insisted he's never smoked crack cocaine, adding, I have a lot of enemies right now because of this thing in Mexico. Oh, that must be it.
Right.
Despite his denials, Linda claims she only has Chapman's best interest at heart. I'm revealing the truth about Dwayne to make him get help before it's too late. I don't want him to die, she said.
I'm the dog, the big bad dog.
1042 at 560 WGM. That's enough. So you were supposed
That's
to tell me what about the rejoins being cut down? See,
Clarence came in this morning and said that, you know, he heard you whining and fetching like a girl.
Who did?
Complaining about those really wonderful rejoins that they spend so much time on to make sure that only the
Who
best
said
part...
This?
Clarence.
Well, screw him.
I'm embellishing a little bit. But
yeah.
We've got some shorter versions for yours truly. For us. For the show.
Good. Oh, in other words, just for us.
Just for us.
Because our audience doesn't want to hear like 5-minute clips from sports shows that they're not listening to in the first place. But if they did listen in the first place, they would have already heard them. Is that what you're trying to say?
Right.
Call this big market radio?
Portals are strange. They're never happy. Never
paid and stay home all alone.
I've got sunshine on W-I-N-Z. When there's a hurricane blowing, baby, it's still the month of May. From 2 to 6, I guess you'll say, what can make me feel that way? Stan Major. Talking about Stan Major. Stan Major. I've got so much honey than the bees can be me. He takes a mobile collars while he's smoking on a stogie. I guess you'll say 2 till 6, W-I-N-Z, Stan Major. Talking about Stan Major, Stan Major. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey. Ooh, yeah. I don't need no other station on my radio. I got 940 locked in, baby, with Stan Major on my radio. All together now, everybody. I guess you say W-I-N-Z today, Stan Major. Talking about Stan Major, Stan Major.
Oh, man.
Reach for it. Reach for the stars.
Does that bring back some memories or what? Jay Michaels, who's a nice guy, but horrible on the ear. At any rate, and I wonder if Stan is still alive, so I just Googled Stan Major. Where are they now? It says Stan arrived in Tampa in the mid-70s, having done successful talk programs in New Orleans, Kansas City, and Milwaukee. He also covered the Vietnam War for NBC News in 69 and 70. I'm looking through this thing, and I don't
see any current events.
In here about what?
Any current events?
Well, no. Stan says, my most vivid recollection of the WDAE era, that's Tampa, was the FBI instructions how to enter and start my car and not get blowed to pieces. Not blown to pieces, blowed to pieces. The minute I hit town, I started doing a bunch of shows on the Kennedy assassination because good old Santos Trafficante was there, along with Gray Lunch, former CIA Bay of Pigs leader and a great hero to the Miami Cubans. In fact, I had Gray on one night and looked him straight in the eye, asked him if he had any part in killing JFK. I don't think I've ever been in a position to ask a question like that before or since. He said no, of course, but then I asked him if he knew any of his Cuban compatriots who had wanted JFK dead, and he said, yes. Stan said the show went well in ratings, but everyone got messed up with an attempt by the Teamsters to organize the station's personnel. We were all gone shortly after that. There's nothing in here about WNWS, about INZ, about any of that stuff. Like he was never even in the market, for Christ's sakes. He returned to the Tampa area in the early 90s to begin America's first live all-night program at the Sun Radio Network. The first 2 years he was based in Clearwater. His national show was heard on about 500 stations over a nine-year period, including our sister stations here in Tampa, Orlando, and West Palm Beach, it says. How do you like that? So I guess he's still alive, although this is a 2002. Ted Webb. Do you have any idea who... What a wicked web we weave when we practice to be weave. So I don't know what's going on with him. I know I still never got my money, and it's a good investment. Too bad we don't take any calls. Maybe that phone would be ringing. It would be Stan on the phone right there. Hey, Stan, go away.
Sure.
That's another reason not to take any. 943 calls on the pool. We'll be to 1,000 before you can say Kirstie Alley is a cow. She is, brother. She is just a gargantuan, and believe me, from one fat pig to another.
So did you see any of that? Because they showed clips of it. I mean... all over the news.
Did I see any of
her? Her big Oprah debut when she showed off her new body wearing a body stocking to hold all
former
the fat in.
Former fat actress Kirstie Alley is hiding a shocking liposuction secret from her fans. She's facing plastic surgery to finish off her dramatic transformation, say sources. Kirstie, who bravely flaunted her figure in a bikini on the Oprah show, which you were just babbling about, November 6th, has said in interviews that she'll never have plastic surgery, but insiders predict she'll soon be singing a different tune. The new Kirstie, they say, is actually considering liposuction to trim down the problem areas that have been resistant to her weight loss efforts. Kirstie is thrilled with all the weight she's managed to lose, but there's still some extra pounds nagging her, no kidding. Although she claims to have lost 75 pounds in a year by following a strict diet and exercise program, Jenny Craig,
have you called Jenny yet? Fettuccine, fettuccine. Cookie dough.
The 55-year-old cow can't lose the fat in her thighs and legs, and experts say only surgery can give her the figure she craves. Dr. Bruce Naylor, a New York-based plastic surgeon and personal trainer, believes that a little nip and tuck would make Kirstie look fantastic. I think a little... Willow would do it. Sorry, wrong button. Right now, she looks disproportionate, said Dr. Naylor. It looks like two different people are joined at the waist. Like they're from two different worlds. By Jane Morgan and Roger Williams on Cap Records. Dr. Naylor explains that because women tend to stir fat in their thighs, additional weight loss would probably come from Kirstie's already svelte upper body, not her lower half. Yes, svelte like Bossy the Elsie the Borden cow. And it goes on. She can't have the surgery right away because it would be a violation of her Jenny Craig contract. She admits she got fat the old thousand way by eating too much. She claims she downed 8,000 calories a day during her feeding frenzy days and ballooned up to a whopping 220 pounds before becoming Jenny Craig's spokesperson. The former Cheers actress is thrilled with the results she's obtained with Jenny Craig, but because she can't seem to lose the inches in her thighs, she's reconsidering lipo. At any rate, here's the story that everybody is hanging on the edge of their seat, at least I am. Reese's $100 million divorce turns ugly. Plus the drugs, the affairs, and the cruelty. Here's a picture of Reese, which, by the way, she looks pretty damn good to me here in Spain. You're always calling her a pig.
She is beautiful. Ugly.
She's not ugly in this picture, man. Maybe it's a good photo. She
it's
looks
a,
almost as
good
pretty
photo,
as Ryan.
You know, lighting, huh? A good angle.
She looks really hot.
Digital
I'll tell you who looks pretty. Me is here. Abby Cornish.
Who?
Abby Cornish and Ryan Philippe Renatum. Says one game hen. Cornish. The bombshell.
Okay.
It's a, well, maybe you don't want to hear about this.
No, I do want to hear about it.
Stuff,
I just,
especially if, what's his name? Ryan's in it.
I don't know her name.
Reese Witherspoon suffered years with a husband from hell who badly betrayed her before she ended her marriage, sources say. Ryan Philippe carried on a string of illicit affairs and used drugs. Well, while Reese, 30,
about 30, man,
struggled to make their seven-year marriage work for the sake of their children, Ava, 7, and Deacon, 3, an Inquirer investigation reveals numerous sources who say that Ryan, 32, repeatedly humiliated the legally blonde beauty behind her back. And if you looked like him, you'd be getting all you could, too. Despite Ryan's bad behavior, he could clean up at the bank since the couple reportedly didn't sign a prenup. Under California law, earnings during a marriage are divided 50-50. At stake in their divorce is $100 million thanks to Reese's mega rise at the Hollywood box office. The couple announced their split October 30th after Reese heard rumors that Ryan was cheating with Australian actress Abby Cornish, 24. Cornish denies having anything to do with the breakup of the marriage. A remorseful Ryan left Reese an ominous note that read, "Say goodbye to the kids for me," said the source close to the couple. An ominous note. Say goodbye to the kids and up yours, honey. Bitch. The Tinseltown twosome appeared blissfully happy when they wed June 5, 99, 3 months before daughter Ava's birth. Their troubles began after their son Deacon was born and spiraled out of control when Reese's fee soared to $29 million a film after she won an Oscar for Walk the Line. Ryan lost interest in Reese, especially after Deacon's birth, said the source. Maybe she was, like, sloppy and saggy. You think that was it?
Maybe you...
Sources claim Ryan... What the hell was that?
I don't know.
Crap. Sources say Ryan stayed in spring 2004 strayed. He didn't stay any strayed while filming Chaos in Vancouver. He cheated with a woman he met at the Cactus Club Cafe across the street from the Opus Hotel where he stayed. She's very petite, much like Reese, but she has big boobs and long dark hair, said an insider in Vancouver. She's got big, big, beautiful boobs and long dark hair. Ryan invited her to the club Bar None one night with him and an actor pal. How come they didn't go to 54? Ryan and the woman left the pal at the bar, went upstairs to talk. They ended up spending that night and several more nights together, doing all sorts of acrobatics and things. Up and down, in and out. One morning, Ryan got up and began to chat with Reese and their kids on his webcam while the woman had just had sex was in the next room. How do you like that? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't no thing.
Mm-hmm.
When the Inquirer asked the woman if she'd had a sexual relationship with Ryan, she answered, "No comment." Shockingly, Ryan's alleged extramarital hijinks in Vancouver don't end there. Ryan was notorious for calling over waitresses at clubs and asking them to bend down like he was going to whisper something in their ear. When they did, he'd stick his nose as close as he could to their necks. After taking a huge sniff, he'd tell them how great they smelled. The guy was a pig. At least he didn't stick his nose in there.
Rectum.
That we know of. I guess he knew how that
smelled. Hey, great. Great smell.
Crash Star also dropped by Brandy's nightclub, the same Vancouver strip club Ben Affleck visited when he cheated on J-Lo. With guys, probably. Ryan looked over every dancer who passed by, said a source. He later said he accompanied one stripper to a second-floor massage parlor where he bragged about the hot time they had together. And it goes on and on and on. Who cares, you know? She looks really good in this picture. You'd be very impressed.
That's fine. I was just watching a movie with her in it over the weekend. It wasn't a bad movie, but boy, is she ugly.
I'm going to tell you, this picture, she looks absolutely beautiful.
If only she looked like that.
Ravishing.
It's not a profile picture, is it?
No.
You can see how misshapen she is from the side. Big bulbous head, lower jaw jutting out like she's kind of a troll.
Yeah. I think Ryan's jutting out, too.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers.
This is the Neil Rogers Show. This is your brain. Any questions?
He gave his little baby son right to Madonna, and now he wants the baby back. What the hell was this guy smoking marijuana? 'Cause now he wants the baby back. Madonna already changed the kid's name to Holly, and now he wants the baby back. I wonder if FedEx ships children to Malawi, 'cause daddy wants the baby back. Maybe the daddy is mental, 'cause he thought it was a rental. He wants him back like an overdue library book. He wants to get his baby back. He thinks that Madonna is a little boy crook, and so he wants his baby back. He thought that the deal was coming with an option. He wants to get his baby back. But that is not the definition of adoption, but still he wants the baby back. Driving with a gin and tonic, or tickets to Harry Connick. He'd have a better life with the material girl.
Oh, the kid in Tennessee, of course, will probably have two eyes on the back of his neck, but nevertheless, at least then he can see where he's going and where he's been.
Yep.
1104 at 560 WQM, free at last, freedom-loving Chris Rock has rocked his family, launching divorce proceedings against his wife in nearly 10 years because marriage made him feel imprisoned, sources say. Well, I bet you there's some of you... Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about.
The popular comic has hired a high-powered divorce attorney to help him shed Malik Compton Rock. Chris, 41, and Malik, 37, have been unhappy for a long time. Chris never wanted to be married in the first place. He felt pressured as he became a star to get married and have a family or else be labeled as gay or in some way unwholesome. Chris tried to make the relationship work for the sake of the couple's daughters, Lola, 4, and Zara, 2, but he's always wanted to be out on the town instead of a family man. The couple married in the November 1996, temporarily split in December 98 because of Chris's celebrity lifestyle, focusing on girls' glitz and glamour. The fun-loving comic enjoyed kicking up his heels with Hollywood pals, including Madonna, a date mate of his before marrying Malik. In early November, the couple finally released. It was time to call it quits. It was nothing personal against Malik. She's a beautiful person, and Chris says he couldn't have asked for a better mother for his children, but time to move on. He said he always felt marriage was like being in jail. George.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's,
Rock's publicist denied that the comic felt trapped by the marriage, but the source concluded Chris always felt marriage was just like being in jail.
Although in jail there's more sex.
Anna Nicole turns tragedy into cash. Since her son died, she's made $2.5 million, selling photos of her son, her new baby, and a staged commitment ceremony with her lawyer. She sold the last photos of Daniel for a reported $650,000. She made an estimated $1 million for selling pictures of a fake wedding to her lawyer companion, Howard K. Stern. The former Playmate then banked $1 million selling her first interview since Daniel's death and a video of her daughter's birth. She is a nasty, hateful bitch. Slut. God, how do you like that? Exploiting her. Well, we already knew about that. And Nicole. She's classy.
Yeah, yeah.
988 votes, I'll guarantee you, by the time that our first break of the hour is over, we're going to have 1,000 votes.
Oh!
And then we can go home and feel like we had a big accomplishment. We got Mad Dog at 2 today, the Power Hour, with a Humper and a Mad Dog between 4 and 5. Which you could hear clips of that if you wanted to listen to, like in the old days, back in the day when we had those long rejoins. Now, what did he actually say to you? I want to hear, I don't want to hear you embellishing and making up crap. What did he say?
He said, I heard Neil, complaining about those rejoins and the length of them, so I gave Josh a list of short rejoins for you guys to play on your show.
Right. As opposed to playing them on the other show, where having a tune-out is okay, I guess.
Well, they love them on the other shows. I'm just making that up.
B.S.
Oh.
B.S.O. 990 votes on the poll. What's your take on these polls? What do you think? Not that we care, but what do you think? They're fine, 751. Once a week is good, 97. Yeah, that would be good, once a week. I hate this poll, 56, as in 5.6%. Look at all the 56s in there, man. I think it's an Oldman. They suck, 43. The polls suck. And get rid of them, 43. Well, that's not even 9% between those last two. They overwhelmingly like the poll. I mean, what's not fine? If you don't like it, don't vote on it. That's all.
No, that's not good enough.
Stay away from it. Keep your hands off it if you don't like it.
Give me something to complain about.
That's what Ryan Philippe told Reese Witherspoon. Keep your hands off it if you don't like it. Keith Olbermann taps the well of discontent as the anti-O'Reilly. See, while Katie Couric is on the verge of getting fired, Keith is moving up in the world.
By the way, that line about pick her up by the feet and eat her like a shrimp.
Yeah.
In that one bit?
Yeah.
No, it was hysterical. I love that line. I think you need to play that again. Just that
Keith
part.
Keith Olbermann just needed to find his voice. He'd been a droll sportscaster, a serious news anchor, and a bickering critic of Fox News host Bill O'Reilly, but none of these personas really clicked. Then he found one. A little over a year ago, as the White House fumbled and botched the Katrina recovery, Olbermann finally blew up. He concluded a broadcast of his MSNBC cable news show Countdown with an indignant rant in the rat-a-tat cadence of his idol Edward R. Murrow. He called it a special comment. And just like that, Olbermann found his voice, the angry everyman. He became a liberal counterpoint to conservative media writers like O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh, and an internet star, too. The result has been a cultural earthquake.
Oh, my God.
How do you like that? A cultural earthquake. You go, Keith. Here's what happened, Olbermann said in a phone interview this week. 5 years ago on 9/11, 50% of the country went quiet. There was this self-imposed censorship. Suddenly, it became unimaginable to criticize the administration, and no one else was brave or stupid enough to say, I don't remember signing that document. Today, Olbermann is hot in every sense of the word. He likes to say that the first step in creating one of his blistering editorials is to get pissed off, and that's certainly how he sounds. And you do understand that getting pissed off.
Pissed off gets me fired up when I hear someone say that.
Right.
I do understand.
But there's something more to it, too. Conservatives may hate his attacks, but no one doubts that he comes across as one of the smarter guys in the room. When he laid into then-Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld August 30th, he threw in references to Neville Chamberlain and the policy of appeasement. Let's see NBC Network anchor Brian Williams pull that off. Not that he would try it. Broadcast networks are not interested in the controversy, Olbermann says. Well, maybe they better start thinking about it. I think, says MSNBC general manager, that punk Dan Abrams, that Keith Olbermann may become a model for the newscast of the future. And sure, Abrams is going to say that because he's Olbermann's boss. Besides, the MSNBC ratings have been on a roll lately, helped by the 67% jump in viewership for Olbermann's show in the year since he began channeling Howard. I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore. Beal from the movie network. How do you like that? He's channeling Howard Beal.
I'm as mad as hell, but I'm not going to take this anymore.
Oh!
But there's something more at work here, a possible new model for the next stage of electronic media. Olbermann isn't just getting more viewers. He's getting more views, lots and lots more. It may have been the Rumsfeld piece that struck a nerve, captured on YouTube. It was emailed all over the country and watched again and again. A month after it appeared on Countdown, it had been seen more than 100,000 times. I was told that this thing was flying all around to various places. He says to hear that as many, if not more, people were seeing it there than when seeing the original was amazing. Not only was it a rock-solid indication that Olbermann was pulling younger viewers, but there was legitimate proof that he could move product as well. The day the Rumsfeld piece aired, pre-orders for Olbermann's new book, The Worst Person in the World, placed it 19,000th on Amazon.com's bestseller list, according to MediaBistro.com, a media news website. After the commentary aired, the book moved to 19th, from 19,000 to 19. A little bit of a move, wouldn't you say, eh?
I'll bet.
It's tangible evidence of what Oberman calls the proverbial ripples on the pond. Not that he needed the book sales to convince him. Wherever he goes, people rush up to him and tell him they've seen one of his special comments and that he speaks for them. 6 weeks ago, Oberman says, a woman burst into tears. I was at a restaurant with my girlfriend. She came up to me and started crying. Suddenly, everyone wants Oberman. Last week, he and political veteran Chris Matthews teamed up to anchor MSNBC's midterm election coverage. The result? Abrams called it a major turning point for this network. Ratings were up across the board, and the coveted 25 to 54 age demographic increased 111% from the 2002 midterm election. What's next? Expect to see Oberman in even more mainstream settings. The next one thing he is resisting, however, is pressure to produce more special comments. He has to feel them, he says, otherwise I'll turn into a cartoon of myself, he'd be saying. Certainly it is the passion that carries the day. As Abrams says, Keith isn't faking this and the viewers can see that. But now that he's got everyone's attention, everyone's asking Oberman the same question. With the result of the election and the resignation of Rumsfeld, where will he find targets? I'm giving the Democrats 6 months, he says, and then they may be in for some special comments of their own. Don't think he's kidding. He's found a point of view and he isn't afraid to use it. Keith Oberman, our countdown, 8 to 9 p.m. MSNBC, Monday through Friday.
You go, Keith.
Yeah, you go, Keith. He's the great white hope. And we got 1,011 votes.
Oh!
Holy moly, I can't believe that. Can you?
I believe it.
What is the significance of that? Is there any significance?
No.
None, absolutely none. We should have put that on there, too, like, who gives a crap? But, you know,
exactly.
No matter what the brilliant poll question is that Sean or one of our listeners, or that maybe even I've come up with on that given day, which is unlikely, and George's answer is, whatever.
I couldn't give a rat's ass.
Screw it. He couldn't care less, and he wants you to know that, too. Because he's a hard ass. He's a little hard ass.
Ambivalent about things that don't affect my life.
That's right. Me, too. Just like the poll result. I keep saying, we could get, and do anybody really think I care?
No.
Of course not. What do I care? The only numbers I care about are the ones on that paycheck.
Are you drudge packing?
My fellow Americans, this is your president, George W. Bush. And I know that, like me, many of you are upset with North Korea's nuclear getting nukes. We are poised on the brink of a serious throwdown here, folks. And what makes matters worse, the North Koreans have called us, quote, gangster-like. I'm here to tell you tonight, we are not gangsters. Because that's just how we roll. In the U.S., yo. Korea's business. Dog, I ain't down with that. Me and the Union Jack. Gonna bust a cap in your ass. And Kim Jong-il. He better just take a chill. What kind of name is Kim, yo? Is that a her or a him? Sounds like a biatch in a hole. That's what he be, a bro with a bad fro. Snoop push a bush. Word to your mom and Emma. And peace out, yo.
We had 1,031 votes on the poll and 760 friends on MySpace, on our MySpace page. I have no idea whether that's good or not.
It's good.
Josh says, for an old fag like me, it's pretty good.
Damn.
That's damn good, you old fag.
The U.S. Embassy in Indonesia warned today that demonstrations over a visit by U.S. President George W. Bush could turn violent and told Americans to be vigilant and avoid protest areas. They hate him like poison. Bush is scheduled to make a short visit to Indonesia, the world's most populous Muslim nation, and an ally in U.S.-led anti-terrorism efforts in Asia on November 20th. There have already been protests from hardline Muslim groups in the run-up to the visit. Separately, an opposition party has criticized the construction of helicopter pads and the 87-hectare botanical gardens in Bogor, a scenic town in the foothills near Jakarta.
Hector.
Hector Lopez used to play third base for the Yankees. Bush's meeting with Indonesian President Yudhoyono, whatever his name is, will take place at a palace in the gardens, and massive security is expected in and around Bogor. While legitimate groups intend the demonstration to be peaceful, any demonstration can turn confrontational and escalate into violence. The U.S. Embassy said in a statement sent to American citizens in Indonesia. The embassy urges Americans to avoid the areas announced as demonstration sites, to avoid crowds, maintain low profile, and be vigilant about security at all times. By Indonesian standards, the protests so far, while frequent, have been relatively small and peaceful. But on Saturday, a low-grade bomb went off at a Jakarta outlet of the U.S.-based A&W restaurant, an incident some local media linked to Bush's visit. How do you like that? They brought a bomb, right? They came on roller skates, and they brought a bomb right to your car. That's sweet.
Special delivery.
1,034 votes on that poll for those poll watchers, man. We got a lot of people out there keep track. They charted. They charted. You want to know why?
I have no line.
Because they got nothing else to do. So Stan, I guess, is doing a syndicated morning show, America Breakfast of Champions, well, something like that, I guess. And, you know, I scoured the internets during the breaks there. I don't know why. Where the hell did that come from?
I don't know.
Well, no, I was looking because between now and the end of the year, I want to play like a lot of stuff we haven't played in a long time. Old, like that.
Oh, yeah. Stan Major. Now on News Talk Radio 610, WIOD.
You got to play the blues.
If you missed the last show, you missed this.
Well, then what the hell is your problem? Kane is in New York, fella.
When he would do a show, I don't want Kane back. I just told you that.
But well, then who do you want? Who do you want? You want Alan Burke?
No, of course not. I think
you want Joey Reynolds?
No, of course not.
Then what the hell do you want on the air? Silence?
I mean, is that all we have to choose?
What do you... Give me a name.
But is that all we...
Who do you want?
Is that all we have
to choose? What kind of content do you want during 2 to 6?
Hear the next Stan Major show this afternoon at 2 on News Talk Radio 610, WIOD.
So anybody buying a neat wristwatch lately? Or how about some Milky Way dark candy bar? Is that what you're referring to? I'll get to it.
Yes.
I'll get to it. I'll get to your buddy Caprita.
He's a good guy.
Oh, and that's another bad thing about not taking any calls. Caprita can't call in anymore, like I said. No, and I like Captain Dave. He's a good guy. He just doesn't have anything to say. Anyway, speaking of Bush's problems in Indonesia and everywhere around the world where he's reviled. In fact, they asked him in Finland, what do you think about President Bush? They said, Hubmandreard. President George W. Bush's response was swift and decisive and a little late after voters gave Republicans a thumping at the polls, handing Democrats control of both houses of Congress. Bush banished his contentious defense secretary, invited the presumptive leaders of the new House and Senate to lunch, and suffered through two pain photo ops with Pelosi and Harry Reid. And what did the president get for listening to the voice of the American people? The worst approval rating of his presidency.
Oh!
Bush's job approval rating has fallen to just 31%, according to the new Newsweek poll. How do you like that? Bill Clinton's lowest rating during his presidency was 36%. Bush's father was 29, and Reagan's lowest was 35%. Jimmy Carter's was 28, Nixon's lowest 23. Just 24% approve of outgoing Defense Secretary Hermann Göring-Rumsfeld's performance, and 31% approve of Dick Cheney. So at least they're even, Stephen, anyway. 31 for Bush, 31 for Cheney. 31%. Worst of all, most Americans are writing off the rest of Bush's presidency. Two-thirds, 66%, believe he'll be unable to get much done, up from 56% in the mid-October poll. Thank God he won't be able to get much done. Only 32% believe he can be effective. But the new poll carries sobering news for Democrats, too, still on their post-victory high. Just about everyone believes the Republicans lost the midterms more than the Democrats won it. I would certainly go along with that. Well, there's Dan Rather. What was that all about?
So far,
what was that all about right there? Did you see Danny Boy?
No.
Presented with a list of factors that may have contributed to the Democrats' success, 85% of Americans said the major reason was disapproval of the administration's handling of the war in Iraq, 71% said disapproval of the Bush's overall job performance, 67% cited dissatisfaction with how the Republicans have handled government spending, and yada yada. And a whole bunch of other numbers that nobody wants to hear, including me. Ponderous. When Venezuela's leftist president Hugo Chavez called President Bush the devil in a UN speech in September, many thought his anti-imperialist rhetoric had reached rock bottom, but, and I see the right-hand margin of this is chopped off. And you know something? I'm using Firefox exclusively. How the hell is this possible? Huh?
I don't know. I give up.
But fresh depths have since been plumbed. The Venezuelan government, to judge recent events, officially regards Bush as a genocidal Nazi who arranged the 9/11 terrorist attacks to justify aggression against other nations. In a speech last week, Chavez criticized the decision of an Iraqi court to sentence dictator Saddam Hussein to the death penalty. If sentencing has been done, Hugo said, the first one to be given the most severe sentence to this planet should be the president. And we already talked about that last week, didn't we? Yes. He said he should have been hung. His comments, which were fairly typical of his recent attacks on Bush, came shortly after the publication of a resolution by Venezuela's Legislative National Assembly describing the 9/11 attacks as self-inflicted. After an exhibition at the Foreign Ministry in Caracas in which Bush was portrayed as a Nazi stormtrooper. I think that's right on. Spot on. Wouldn't you say so?
I would.
Chavez and Foreign Minister Nicolas Maduro have referred several times to suspicions that the 9/11 attacks were planned by the Bush administration and called for an inquiry. Yada, yada, yada. Well, there you go. But, of course, the Democrats now, there's not going to be any impeachment, you understand. And, you know, Pelosi and even Howie Dean, all this other wishy-washy. And, of course, Harry Reid, who's a dead man in a suit. That when Harry Reid is driving, they do a breathalyzer, not to see if he's drunk, just to see if he's still breathing. He's a dead man in a suit, I would say. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes.
I sure hope I didn't miss anything important in this inquiry. Sharon's basic instinct is back. Do we care about that old bag anymore? No.
No. Wrinkly and nasty.
Penny Marshall is a first-class witch when she flies coach. Do we care about that old bag? No. Whitney saves her house from a foreclosure. We care about that psychotic nut? No. Martha versus Rachel Ray. Domestic diva schemes to survive against talk show newcomer. Do we give a crap about either of them? No. Tom Cruise's what?
It's not like Rachel Ray is so great. She's just not Martha Stewart, who we hate, so we hope she trounces.
You go, Rachel, that's right.
And she's a dwarf.
A widow dwarf?
Yes.
Tom Cruise's pit stop. Do we care about Tom? Not unless he's coming out.
Pit stop.
Yeah, pit stop. Made a pit stop at a tea room somewhere. Ex-pal, ex-gal pal, fears Keith can't stay clean and sober. Keith Urban. Oh, boy. Nicole pregnant, but baby joy ruined by a threat of divorce. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
She's finally pregnant, but her marriage to Keith Urban is a mess. Well, I guess, who cares? Who the hell is he anyway? Some kind of country dude?
You know it.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Want to hear some?
No. Well, I don't want to hear no Keith Urban. Maybe a little Keith Suburban. Borat bashed in clothes encounter over sex gag. That's C-L-O-T-H-E-S, clothes encounter. I don't want to read it. Anyway, Josh saw the Borat movie, thought it was great.
Some of the funniest crap I've seen in a long time.
Good. Mm-hmm. In other sightings during the week, we zeroed in on Jake Gyllenhaal Tuesday afternoon at Vine Party and Craft Store in Hollywood. He was there with a gorgeous brunette, but they didn't appear to be an item. The couple was goofing around like best friends, and when they both spotted a young lovely in line, Jake's gal pal urged him to go over and start up a conversation with a pretty stranger. Jake seemed too shy and couldn't pull it together to go talk to her. Oh, it said. Oh, poor Jake. Give me a break, Jake.
Jake.
Put away your snake. 26 letters, Danny Boy, Dan Rather.
If you had to bet it, I think you'd have to bet that we'll have gridlock. That's not my hope, and there is a possibility that if...
Poor Danny Boy, man. Look at that. Pop Hat Danny, look what we got now. Katie Couric, she's been fired, says the Inquirer, or being fired, or might be fired, or somebody's talking about, you know, her ratings sucked, to make a long story short, and so does she. Anybody with a brain knew she didn't belong on there. She's a newsreader like I'm a rocket scientist, okay? Like I'm a genius. Just ask Claire and she'll tell you I'm a moron, especially when it comes to radio. What the hell could I know?
Right.
Now look at those old demographics, man. Look at those big old numbers we got, huh? 27 past 11 at 560 WQM. Mad Dog at 2, and then that power hour, baby. And then we got the Humper, who's tilting those scales, man, at record levels.
That was funny.
How's Gary Sarner doing, by the way? Is he still alive? Or
how's he doing what?
Whatever.
He's around.
Kosher.
Sure.
God, your breasts are beautiful.
This is Eyewitness News.
Dr. Phil, the crack addict staying at your house.
What happened?
One of them defecated in my roses.
Yeah.
And another one made love to my lawn cherub.
Deal with it.
What?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do?
Get him to leave.
How do you feel now?
How do I feel?
How do you feel when he spits in your face and calls you disgusting names?
Standing there looking goofy. Shut up! Dude, get him out of here.
Did it feel good?
Look, I don't want feelings therapy. I want the naked homeless guy to put his pants on and stop humping my chihuahua.
Hell, I'm a damn sex machine.
11:32, 28 till noon. Dr. Phil, man, has he got some talent or what? Huh?
No.
No. 1,066 votes on the poll. Aren't you whipped up about that?
No.
A California man suspected of mailing threatening letters containing a suspicious white powder to celebrities and U.S. politicians has been arrested and could face federal charges today, the FBI said. We still have got no idea, just in case you were keeping track, or maybe you forgot about the people who sent the...
Anthrax.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We have no clue who did that, not even any more persons of interest. But investigators identified Chad Castagana, 39, of Woodland Hills, California, as the person suspected of sending more than a dozen threatening letters to media outlets and the homes of public figures in various cities, the FBI said in a statement last night. According to the federal search warrant, among those who received threatening letters were John Stewart of Comedy Central's The Daily Show, talk show host David Letterman, Keith Olbermann of MSNBC, Representative Nancy Pelosi of California, and Senator Chuck Schumer of New York. The document filed on Friday in U.S. District Court in L.A. said multiple people in various cities, including New York and San Francisco, received letters over the past 3 months that contained an unknown white powder in various written threats. In some cases, the threatening letters included expressions such as death to demagogues and references to Alan Berg, a Jewish talk radio host murdered by white supremacists in Denver in 1984. Tests determined that the white powder sent in the letters was non-hazardous, the statement said. Castagana was arrested Saturday at his home, expected to make an initial appearance in federal court today. In 2001, as we well remember, powdery anthrax spores sent in letters to news organizations and government offices in Florida, Washington, and elsewhere, killed five people, made at least 17 people ill, and those cases still haven't been solved. But they're working feverishly at it, you can be sure of that, aren't they?
Oh, that's what they say.
And how about Osama Yamama? We got him in Willabulla Omar, and
we're
going to smoke them out of their holes. We're going to smoke them out, man. When in doubt, smoke them out. Speaker in waiting, the mousy Nancy Pelosi, threw her support behind Representative John Murtha for Majority Leader yesterday, giving a significant boost to Big Fat John in his race against Representative Steny Hoyer. And what kind of a name is Steny anyway, huh? Your strong voice for national security, the war on terror in Iraq provides genuine leadership for our party, and I count on you to continue to lead on these vital issues, Pelosi wrote to Murtha yesterday in a letter obtained by The Hill. I wonder if that's in relation to Glenn Hill, speaking of that. You know, I don't think we can play that bit anymore either.
Which one? I Hate the Bird?
Yeah, well, I know we can't. I mean, we can, but I got to like...
If you missed the Neil Rogers show yesterday on 610 WIOD, you missed this.
Is this the Bird?
Yeah.
Bird, how you doing?
Okay.
Listen, do me a favor. Play anything, because I can't stand listening to you. You sound like a douche.
Do
it. Just do me a favor.
Nice.
Play anything.
Well, can I ask you a question before you go?
Oh, God, you sound so stupid. I hate to talk to you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, why did you call me? I didn't call you.
No, no, just to tell you not to say anything. Just play something. Oh, God, can't stand it.
Well, then why are you listening?
No, play something already.
Why won't you answer my...
Can't stand him.
You won't... See, he won't talk to me. Oh, we got a car here. Hello?
Anyway... As the House Democrats' unchallenged leader, Pelosi's considerable sway over her colleagues, she and Murtha have long been close allies, but until now, she hadn't interfered in the majority leader race. Santino, don't interfere. Remember that, Mama Corleone?
That's right.
Don't interfere. Her endorsement has the potential. We don't talk business at the table. Her endorsement has the potential to turn the race, especially if she chooses to campaign on Murtha's behalf. Pelosi's decision to back Murtha is the most significant move she has made since Democrats scored that historic victory election day, the biggest movement she's made since the visit to the bowl. Reacting to the letter, Hoyer said her support for Murtha was no surprise. Nancy told me some time ago she'd personally support Jack. I respect her decision as to our very close, he said in a statement. I'm grateful for the support I have from my colleagues and have the majority of the caucus supporting me. I look forward to working with Speaker Pelosi as majority leader, bada, 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 but whatever. Anybody interested in this crap? No, I'm not.
No.
We had 1,078 votes on the poll. Like I said, now the election's over. What now? Right?
Right. Now we wait.
Wait for what?
For something. They better do something, too.
Well, what the hell are they going to do?
Impeach. War crimes.
A Chinese submarine stalked a U.S. aircraft carrier battle group in the Pacific last month and surfaced within firing range of its torpedoes and missiles before being detected.
Oh, my God.
The Washington Times has learned. The surprise encounter highlights China's continuing efforts to prepare for a future conflict with the U.S., despite Pentagon efforts to try to boost relations with Beijing's communist-ruled party. Comunista, communista. See, never trust those communistas, baby. The submarine encounter with USS Kitty Hawk and its accompanying warships also is an embarrassment to the commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific, Admiral William J. Fallon, who is engaged in an ambitious military exchange program with China aimed at improving relations between the two nations' militaries. I wonder if he's related to the British jockey Kevin Fallon. I think that's his name. You know Kevin Fallon? He ain't no Frankie Dettori, I'll tell you that. The disclosure of the incident comes as Admiral Gary Roughead, commander of the U.S. No comment.
Right.
Commander of the U.S. Navy's Pacific Fleet is making his first visit to China. There's nothing like rough sex. The four-star admiral was scheduled to meet senior Chinese military leaders during the week-long visit, which began over the weekend. According to the defense officials, the Chinese Song class diesel-powered attack submarine shadowed the Kitty Hawk undetected and surfaced within 5 miles of the carrier October 26th. The surface submarine was spotted by a routine surveillance flight by one of the carrier's group planes. The Kitty Hawk battle group includes an attack submarine, anti-submarine helicopters that are charged with protecting the warships from submarine attack. According to the officials, these submarines equipped with Russian-made wake-homing torpedoes and anti-ship cruise missiles. And it goes on and on and on. Got to watch that movie, While We Fight, but you won't. We're in the war business. Isn't that what he said?
That's
you're the Bushmeister, I'm a wartime president?
That's our only export anymore.
Maybe we could use the wartime consigliere, not a wartime president. Pophead Jenko, look what we got. So let me tell you why Clarence came in there and told you about those short rejoins, and that's because, obviously, and you know this, because you had lunch last week with Joe Bell,
and
you told him that we're sick
just
and tired
a
of
coincidence.
That bad programming.
I'm sure
it's
that
not
was just a
because Neil was complaining or heard me on the air, right. And it wasn't his decision. It's because Joe Bell told him, get those long, ponderous rejoins out of there. You're killing Neil, and you're killing the length of listenership. You jackass, you idiot.
You fairy.
Right. That's why. I mean, the audience knows that. Uh-oh, Senator Carl Evans speaks to reporters about Iraq. It's a bulletin.
Contingencies that we're likely to face.
Get those bifocals focals back up there.
Non-traditional.
Oh, geez, I can't believe I had to dump myself again.
Oh, well.
Isn't that what they're called?
Yeah.
Bifocals. My knees buckle when I think of
makes me chuckle.
I can't believe I said that. Yeah, just a chuckle makes your knees buckle, I know.
Yeah, that's all right.
I know it's all right.
Happens
hey, it's
all
Monday.
The time.
What do you want
sure.
from me? Okay, it's Monday. Plus a lot of stress. I didn't even get to watch American Dad yet.
No rush.
Oh. Not as good as the...
No, it's South good. It's well, I mean, it's along those lines, but nothing is South Park.
Not as good as the episode with the...
With the what?
Tom in a Closet.
Oh, well, a few things are.
That's true.
Don't bother me while I'm in here.
Arthur!
Hello?
It's Mickey Mouse.
Oh, Mr. Mouse, good morning. How are you?
What the hell are you doing to me?
Nothing, sir.
You're freaking killing me.
No, I'm not.
I got David Kelly calling me every 3 minutes. Why did we move the practice?
Sir, you told me to move the practice.
I didn't tell you any. You must have misunderstood me.
No, sir. You said move the practice to Monday.
Hey. Listen, Buttwipe, I'm the boss. I make the decisions, you take the heat.
Right.
You move the practice.
Okay,
how are we doing with it anyway? Hold on. Remus!
Yeah, boss?
Shut the hell up! I'm on the phone, Remus! Heisner!
Yes, sir, what was your question?
I'm telling you, I'm going crazy over here. Between David Kelly and now Michael Jackson calling me every 3 minutes, I'm going to go out of my freaking mind. Hold on. Remus!
Get here, you boss.
Stop it, Remus!
I'm calling the floor, boss.
Stop calling the floor, Remus! Remus! What's this in my hand, Remus?
That's your penis, boss.
My other hand, Remus.
Oh, that's a phone, boss.
Right. I can't hear anything, Remus. Stop sawing the floor.
Sorry.
Heisner.
Sir, the moves are working out very well. The practice is fourth in its time slot and moving
fourth
up.
Fourth in its time slot? Christ, are we even beating the WB?
Barely.
Oh, my God.
The Michael Jackson thing was a rating success.
Of course. Hold on a second. Remus.
Yeah, boss.
What the hell are you doing with a harmonica, Remus?
Play a little song, boy.
Well, don't play it, Remus. I'll jam that thing down your throat. And get that bluebird away from me.
Oh, come on, bluebird.
I'm allergic.
Eisner.
Sir, over 25 million people saw...
Shut up, Eisner. Listen.
Yeah.
You see me, what I'm doing here?
Sir, you're on the phone.
I know I'm on the phone. Do you see what I'm doing? Use your imagination for crying out loud. I'm moving my hands up and down, side to side. I'm the puppet master. I say it, you do it. Now Fox is going to air all the stuff that you cut out of the Michael Jackson interview.
But sir, you told me to edit out all that stuff to make him look like a freak.
Puppet master, me. Idiot. Oh. Remus!
Yes, yeah, boss.
What the hell are
killing me. Killing me.
I'm sorry, sir.
Killing me.
Sorry.
Killing me softly.
So Carl Evans says the U.S. should start taking troops out of Iraq in 6 months, and he's got those bifocals right down there on the tip of the nose, and it looks like they're going to fall right off, like they always do, you know?
Continue to be chairman, and I will be as ranking.
There you go. Carl Evans, you know, Jewish senator from
I don't even wear those little glasses, yeah.
Bifocals.
Is that what they are?
According to Washington Insiders, there are moves afoot to dump Vice President Dick Cheney and replace him with either John McCain or Rudy Giuliani prior to the 2008 presidential election. Whoever succeeds Cheney will be able to campaign for the presidency with the perks that come with being an incumbent vice president. You know, like Al Gore. Since the increasingly besieged Cheney has signaled he's got no intention of voluntarily stepping down, the strategy by the Bush camp may be to force him out by presenting evidence before Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald that it was Cheney who was responsible for the compromise of a CIA officer, covert officer Valerie Plame Wilson, and a Brewster Jennings and Associates cover firm. Observers note the unusual professional relationship between Fitzgerald and Karl Rove's defense attorney Robert Luskin. Insiders believe that Fitzgerald may be proffered a carefully crafted deal by Luskin, whereby Rove will testify to Cheney's primary role in the outing of Mrs. Wilson and her firm. The sealed indictment of Rove will then be retired permanently. If such a deal is worked out, Fitzgerald may then offer a deal to Scooter Libby, Cheney's former chief of staff, also to testify against Cheney. With such double-barreled testimony, President Bush will then be compelled to ask Cheney for his resignation or face a very nasty and public indictment. The game plan appears to be what D.C. insider Sally Quinn foresaw in her Washington Post op-ed last month, an article that suggested she has spoken extensively to Donald Rumsfeld, who was aware of his impending firing. The op-ed stated that Rumsfeld would not be the scapegoat for Iraq and planned to resign shortly after the election. Quinn, seemingly channeling Rumsfeld, stated that after Rumsfeld left, there will be only two scapegoats left, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. The article concluded by asking which person would be served up as the official scapegoat for Iraq. This editor wrote, based on the arrival of James Baker and the coterie of George Herbert Walker Bush old hands on the seal to bail out W, it's clear that the Bush family does not intend to allow one of its own to be declared a scapegoat. With word from White House sources that Cheney was opposed to the sacking of his old mentor Rumsfeld and even more resistant to the naming of Bush family loyalist Robert Gates to take his place, it's clear that Cheney doesn't want to be placed in a position of exposure. However, even Cheney neocon allies like Richard Perle and Ken Edelman, sensing that Cheney is the designated scapegoat, have bellowed about the Iraq war being a mistake and are now distancing themselves from the Cheney group, once the most powerful operating cell within the Bush administration. It's a power play, man. It's a power grab. This group over here and the neocons over there and a bunch of bullcrap. That's why all these people are dead. Power play. Mm-hmm. Like a hockey game, you know? Hockey game.
Ow!
1,097 votes on the poll. I say let's bring the troops home by in time for Thanksgiving. This
time
weekend.
For lunch.
That's right. Time for lunch. Or at least a big Thanksgiving dinner. And say, hey, guess what, Al Maliki and all your other Al Rosen, Al Schwartz, Al Goldstein. You guys are all on your own over there, okay? You lunatics. Good luck to you. Stick right. Your long up to the oil fields and Mazel Tov.
What is it they say in Ireland? Hubbumdraird? Something like that? Hubbubum?
Paul Krugman writes, true blue populist in the New York Times today. He says, Senator George Allen of Virginia is understandably shocked and despondent. Just a year ago, a National Review cover story declared that his hometown persona made him quite possibly the next president of the U.S. Instead, his political career seems over. And it wasn't just Makaka or even the war that brought him down. Mr. Allen, Makakowicz, a reliable defender of the interests of the economic elite, found himself facing an opponent who made a point of talking about the problem of rising inequality. And the tobacco-chewing, football-throwing, tax-cutting, Social Security-privatizing senator was only one of many fake populists defeated by real populists last Tuesday. Ever since movement conservatives took over, the Republican Party has pushed for policies that benefit a small minority of wealthy Americans at the expense of the great majority of voters. To hide this reality, conservatives have relied on wagging the dog and wedge issues, but they've also relied on a brilliant marketing campaign that portrays Democrats as elitists and Republicans as representatives of the average American. This sleight of hand depends on shifting the focus from policy to personal style. John Kerry speaks French and windsurfs, so pay no attention to his plan to roll back tax cuts for the wealthy and use the proceeds to make health care affordable. This year, however, the American people wised up. True to form, some reporters still seem to be falling for the conservative spin. If it walks, talks like a conservative can be a damn ass to headline on a CNN.com story featuring a photo of Senator-elect John Tester of Montana. In other words, if a Democrat doesn't fit the right-wing caricature of a liberal, he must be a conservative. But as Robert Toner and Kate Zernike of the New York Times pointed out yesterday, what actually characterizes the new wave of Democrats is a strong streak of economic populism. Looking at Mr. Tester's actual policy positions, yes to an increase in the minimum wage, no to Social Security privatization, we need to stand up to big drug companies and have Medicare negotiate for lower prices, we should stand up to big insurance companies and support a health care plan that makes health care affordable for all Montanans, he said. So what, aside from his flat-top haircut, makes Mr. Tester a conservative? Okay, he supports gun rights, but on economic issues, he's currently clearly left of center, not just compared with the current Senate, but compared with current Democratic senators. The same can be said of many other victorious Democrats, including Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, Sheldon Whitehouse in Rhode Island, and Sherrod Brown in Ohio. All these candidates run on unabashedly populist platforms and won. What about Jew Lieberman? Like shipwreck survivors clinging to flotsam, some have seized on his re-election as proof of Americans' continuing conservatism, but Mr. Lieberman won only through denial and deception, for example, by rewriting the history of his once fervent support for the Iraq War and Donald Rumsfeld. He got two-thirds of the Republican vote, but managed to confuse enough Democrats about his position to get over the top. Last week's populist wave, among other things, vindicates the populist direction that Al Gore took in the closing months of the 2000 campaign. But will this wave be reflected in the actual direction of the Democratic Party? Not necessarily. Quite a few sitting Democrats have shown themselves nearly as willing as Republicans to bow to corporate interests. Consider the vote on last year's draconian bankruptcy bill. Mr. Lieberman voted for cloture, cutting off debate, and ensuring the bill's passage. Then he voted against the bill, a meaningless gesture that let him have it both ways. 13 other Democratic senators also voted for cloture, including Joe Biden, who's just announced his candidacy for presidency. The first big test of the new Democratic populism will come over reform of the 2003 prescription drug law. Democrats have pledged to repeal the clause in that law preventing Medicare from negotiating lower drug prices, but the fine print of how they do that is crucial. Medicare reform could be a mere symbolic gesture, or it could be a real reform that eliminates the huge implicit subsidies the program currently gives to drug and insurance companies. Are the newly invigorated Democrats ready to offer real change in this country's direction? We'll know in a few months, says Paul Krugman. Like you said, well, you know, give us some time.
And now we wait.
1099, that's not your tax form, that's how many votes we got. Aren't you excited?
No.
Not even tax season. I'm not excited either. I'm tired of these pools, man. Although I got the one for tomorrow already.
Good.
Thanks to the article I read about Dog the Bounty Hunter, just to give you a little clue what it might be. But don't go into it now.
Don't go into what?
Whatever it was.
The dog?
Don't do the dog. Here comes the dog. 1,103 votes. What's your take on these polls? They're fine. 841, 76.2%. That is shocking. Once a week is good, 108. Yeah, once a week is good. How about for the poll? I hate this poll, 61. Get rid of them, 47. Then they suck, 46. Get rid of them. Schmidt can them. Dump them. Toss them. Stick them where the moon don't shine, you know? See, I like putting those negatory things on there because there's so many of these people out there that they jones for them, and they're dying for it. They live for it.
Okay.
Where can I go and release my ventum, you know? So we put a little bit of that. In fact, if nothing else, the poll may not give you any real clue as to anything, but at least it goes to show that negativity is really alive and well in South Florida. Except, of course, about the fish. Oh, my God, I think the real fish has swum to the top. I can just hear it now, man. Oh, my God, after that thumping against the Bears, and then yesterday two in a row now.
Well, maybe Sports Illustrated was right. They're going to go to the Super Bowl.
10-6, baby. You can smell it.
The biggest names, the best talent.
Like,
this is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
This is Dick Cheney. I like to relax by having Mary Magdalene massage my balls while listening to the Neil Rogers 12 to 1 hour.
Who can eat a person? From their head to toes. Leave the legs for last. He begins right at your nose. Cannibal. Yeah. The cannibal can. He has a little wine while he nibbles on your spine. He says it all tastes good. He broke out of prison. Started heading east. Traveled all through Europe, dining on a human feast. Cannibal. He's the cannibal man. Listens to a tune. While he eats you with a spoon, he says it all tastes good. While in Italy, on a killing spree, looking for a little hottie, you better protect your body, or you'll be human medicati. He takes your pinky finger and he eats it on a Ritz. Cannibal,
cannibal,
yeah, the cannibal can,
the cannibal can.
All you feel is dread when he approaches you with bread. He says it all tastes good.
It's delicious. 1201 at 560 WQM. How come I can't find Superman on my 25th anniversary edition of TV Classic Themes? That would be really bad.
That would be bad. Maybe I got it.
Well, I know I got it here somewhere. I played it a million times. Where the hell is it? Well, the reason I mention that is because guess what was on like a biography?
What?
No, not Sunshine Superman by that stupid ass Donovan. What a jacket.
Hey, that's all I got.
Oh. How depressing.
Sunshine came softly.
Jesus. Anyway, so there was like a two-hour special on the history of Superman, which I just printed a bunch of stuff out. There's like 400 pages about it, which I finally stopped it. I can't stand that. Oh, I know. Highlight this. Where the hell is it, man? You've heard me play it 50 billion times.
Sure. I don't have any.
Howdy doody. I'll find it. Kill some time here. I got it. Man, too many discs here. Just too many discs and so
long. I know.
You know, we haven't done that in a long time. You know, with the TV themes, I love those.
Me too.
I love those shows.
Me too.
The audience, of course, is saying, oh, not that again. Ah, not that again. Oh, my God. Those theme songs you're going to play.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Jimmy Olsen. Anyway, well, that's pretty melodramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster were the creators of Superman. And the movie, the thing on TV, on A&E, I don't know where the hell it was. Anyway, it was Not Dog the Bounty Hunter, so I watched it.
Okay.
And they went through all the various incarnations from the comic book days and then the first movie and all the other movies and Super, the Return of Superman. Now, did you guys see that? I forgot to ask. Superman Returns?
I saw it.
And?
It sucked.
Sucked. And, of course, the earlier ones with Marlon Brando and yada yada,
mm-hmm.
and all the TV shows. And then, of course, even Tom Welling. You know, it just was dawning on me while I was playing that. Tom Welling, you'll notice, doesn't wear the Superman outfit. They don't want him to be Superboy.
Right.
So he doesn't wear the outfit, which I was thinking he would look good in those really, really tight red tights, you know. But anyway, because the lives of... That's me.
Hey.
Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, they were both Jewish, and they are both...
Dead?
Yes. Joe Shuster was born July 10, 1914, in Toronto. 4 months later, Jerry Siegel was born in Cleveland, and as Jerome Siegel, on October 17, 1914. Jerry grew up loving science fiction, always knew he wanted to be a science fiction writer. Jerry would write and submit some stories to Amazing Stories and Science Wonder Stories. The stories were rejected, but Jerry didn't give up. If they would publish them, he'd publish them, whatever that means. In 1929, Jerry would create a fanzine, whatever that means, called Cosmic Stories for his typewritten rejected stories. This is written so poorly, it's pathetic. Today, Cosmic Stories is recognized as the very first science fiction fanzine, as opposed to magazine like a comic book. Joe Shuster's family would move to Cleveland, Ohio when he was 9. He'd meet and befriend Jerry Siegel around 31. Both of them would go to the same Glenville High School, and they both had the same love of science fiction stories, either as novels or comic strips. They enjoyed such strips as Little Nemo, Tarzan, Flash Gordon, Secret Agent X-9, John Carter of Mars, and The Shadow. The Shadow knows.
That I might have. Also,
I beg your pardon?
I might have that.
Lamont Cranston. They would also have a love of movies, regardless if they were A or B class. It was shortly after the two met they began working together, I'll bet. The two would produce another sci-fi fanzine called Science Fiction. Joe Shuster was the art editor. Jerry was an editor, too. They published Science Fiction. Well, where the hell does it get to Batman? Oh, Joe and Jerry, let's see. Jerry would read a book called Gladiator, written by Philip Wiley. This book had a character that, at super strength, was able to leap 40 feet and could let bullets bounce off his chest. This, along with other fictional characters, would inspire a new Superman. Those other characters were Doc Savage, sometimes advertised as Superman Doc Savage, Hercules, and Samson.
Gladiator.
Joe and Jerry first tried to sell the Superman in 1933. They created a few different comic strip formats of Superman, even a cartoon version. Once a Chicago publisher was interested in the character but didn't follow through. Dummy. Joe was heartbroken over this and tore up and burned all of his Superman artwork, vowing not to do it again until he had the time to rework the character properly. The only original artwork left was the cover, saved by Jerry Siegel. During the rejection periods, Joe had to work part-time jobs doing deliveries for a grocery store, selling ice cream bars on the street and carrying heavy boxes. I wonder if he sold Eskimo pies. I don't know what got me thinking about that yesterday. I haven't had an Eskimo pie. They still make them?
As far as I know.
But I haven't seen any in years. Jerry would then have trouble sleeping one summer night in 1934. One Summer Night by the Dan Lears. You got that?
By the who?
The Dan Lears. You ever see Dan Lear? As he tossed and turned because of the heat, he kept thinking more and more about a new Superman character. He would wake up with little bits of ideas, and he would scribble them down on paper each time. By the time morning arrived, Jerry had his character. He ran all 12 blocks to Joe Shuster's apartment to explain his new version of Superman. Joe also became excited, and the two of them would start to work on a costume design for the character. The new Superman would be one from a plant dying from old age. He was put into a rocket ship and sent away to Earth for his continued survival. He would land on Earth, and a passing motorist who found a sleeping baby put him into an orphanage with a physical structure millions of years more advanced than our own. The attendants of the orphanage noticed the baby's great strength. When the baby grew up, he became Superman. He would also become Clark Kent, a shy, introverted man who was usually ignored by women. Jerry says he was telegraphing himself into Clark Kent. Like Clark, Jerry was shy and introverted. He wore glasses, interested in writing science fiction. He admired women from afar, but in return, they didn't even notice him. Joe also shared these traits, so the feelings were mutual. Jerry also decided to add an attractive, gutsy lady reporter named Lois Lane. She would add romance to the comic by falling in love with Superman, but would spurn Clark Kent, not knowing they were the same. She was a little bit... Lois was a little bit slow,
A shallow whore.
Then Jerry and Joe would work out a costume and appearance for Superman. Jerry would suggest putting an S in a triangle on Superman's chest. He would also suggest adding a cape to add the visual effect when Superman ran, jumped, and battled the bad guys. Joe would come up with the rest of the costume and Superman's physical look. Once again, the two would go out and try to sell Superman, but the new version got rejected again and again. One editor who rejected some of the Siegel's earlier work told them, "What you got to do, kid, is come up with a comic strip that is absolutely sensational."
Absolutely.
Upon seeing 4 weeks of Superman strips, the same editor shook his head and replied, "The trouble with this kid is it's too sensational. Nobody would believe it." Aren't we supposed to believe comic strips, you know, like Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, they have to make sense.
And Peanuts, dogs and mice that talk and things like that.
The thing that makes the least sense, and I want to know which one of those guys thought about putting his underwear on the outside of his pants.
Other editors seemed interested in Superman, but would still reject Joe and Jerry's work. They often worried that they would go and do a watered-down version of Superman. There were other times when Superman almost did get published, but for one reason or another, it didn't work out. But Joe and Jerry weren't worried. They'd become comic book pros, getting low-paying jobs doing a bunch of comics for publisher Major Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. The major was interested in publishing Superman, but Joe and Jerry turned down his offer because they thought Superman should be in a better company. One small newspaper wanted Jerry to do a daily serial action of Superman, but both Joe and Jerry turned this down. And what about Johnny and Joe? Over the Mountain, and I know you got that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Over the Mountain, that's a good song. But both Joe and Jerry turned this down as well because they felt written stories wouldn't fully produce the excitement that Superman was supposed to bring. The Mountain. They felt only a comic book style story would be best for Superman. During these years, Joe and Jerry did work with comics such as New Fun, Spy, Slam Bradley, Henry Duval, Radio Squad, and Federal Men. In New Fun number 6, the duo would create Dr. Occult, who was a magician with a gravity rod that allowed him to do many spectacular things. I guess most of us have a gravity rod.
Yeah,
we'd
spin
it down. Dr. Occult first appeared in 1935, New Fun number 6, and this goes on. Tip Top Comics wanted to try Superman. They were turned into a newspaper by United Features Syndicate, and they felt readers would soon be bored of Superman. Some newspaper editors did try to help Joe and Jerry by spreading around their Superman work. McNaught Syndicate was one of them, and because M.C. Gaines was needed more comics to produce, they sent Superman to him. Max Gaines didn't like Superman, but his editor Sheldon Mayer did. Sheldon tried to get Superman published in his popular comics magazine, but Max wouldn't agree with it. Despite that, his boss had negative opinions. Sheldon Mayer still liked Superman and wouldn't give up on him. In fact, he stalled giving Superman stories back to Jerry and Joe so he could convince somebody else to publish it. And it goes on and on. And DC was trying to start up an Action Funnies comic. Didn't have enough stories for the comic. As agreed, Max Gaines went looking around for something for them to use, and that's when Sheldon stepped up and said, "Well, there's always Superman." Max replied it was better than nothing and sent it over. Max got Jerry's okay to send Superman over and other stories to DC for possible publishing. DC's editor, Vin Sullivan, told Jerry they were picking Superman over everything else, DC Comics. They asked the duo to rewrite some of the story, gave them 3 weeks to complete a 13-page story. It was published in May 38 with a June cover date in Action Comics number 1. For their work, Joe and Jerry received a $130 check. Wow! Which was for the first issue and the rights to the character. Good deal, guys!
Yeah.
Wow. But the good news is, by 1941, they were paid $75,000 each for their work on Superman. But when they sold the DC the Superman story in 38, they also sold DC the copyright to the character. This was normal business practice for those times. By 46, they were getting paid close to $100,000 a year, but they saw DC make millions off the Superman character. In 1946, they hired attorney Albert Zugsmith to take D.C. to court for the rights of Superman and Superboy. They spent all their money through legal fees by 48 and finally settled out of court for a paltry $200,000. How do you like that? Isn't that pathetic?
Yeah.
And now they're both dead. It's a riches to rags story, if you ask me. A rags to rags story. 1,127 votes on the poll. There's your president.
And what's interesting is...
Yeah, what's interesting is he's still there. He's still in there. So what do you think of Superman? What are your thoughts on dessert? So I saw that again last night. It was on.
Did
it's
you?
Funny because I just said that to you last week.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about dessert? Pin. That was made in Canada, by the way. Did you
was
know
it?
That?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Well, kind of figured. But, you know, her boyfriend was kind of a woodsy owl kind of guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were chopping a lot of wood. There's a lot of wood in that movie. But anyway, that's a good movie if you have a weekend and you're bored to death. It's, you know, George, did Josh see it?
Pin?
No.
About the mannequin?
I don't think so.
I'll bring it for him.
Yeah, it's not that long of a movie. It's not that slow. It's got a little something in it, and we won't
ruin
it for him by telling that.
Don't let
1,132 votes on that poll.
The biggest names, the best talent.
So in the end,
this is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560.
Have you seen Leon lately?
Oh God.
Merlin Olsen for STD.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Merlin. You feeling all right? You're covered with running sores.
I think I'm going blind, too.
Sounds like syphilis, Merlin.
Could be. Somebody just sent me this lovely STD pick-it-up bouquet.
The STD pick-it-up bouquet?
That's right, Bob. A selection of Petri dishes, each containing a virulent and highly contagious sexually transmitted disease.
Who would send you something like that?
Oh, ex-wife, disgruntled girlfriend, could be any number of people. You know, I played pro ball for a number of years, and there's a lot of casual sex on the road.
Well, it's nice to know that somebody somewhere is thinking about you.
Yeah.
Spread the joy and the germs with an STD pick-it-up bouquet. STD, it's the next best thing to being there. Doing it.
Yeah, do this. 20 past noon at 560 WQM. Mad Dog coming up at 2 this afternoon. And I'm sure that the Dolphins, man,
all right,
are back on track. They're kicking ass. 10-6. We can smell it. Mmm. Like roses, like lilacs. Oh, so speaking of, well, see, the thing that really bothers me about, and, you know, call me fuddy-duddy and old, which I'm both, but it's disturbing to me that, you know, if there's a character, if there's a story, like Batman, for example, you know, mm-hmm. It's Batman and Robin. It's not just Batman without Robin, and it's not Batman with all these different, and like the Batman movies have been very untrue to the story.
They all sucked.
Yeah, every one of them sucked. Batman and Robin, the TV show, was great.
For a comedy, yeah. I mean, the comic book wasn't supposed to be comedy either, but I liked the TV show, too.
What are you trying to say?
The TV show was a comedy.
I understand that. It was camp.
Right. On purpose.
Right.
Well done, camp. But the comic book was, wasn't supposed to be funny.
But it was.
Okay.
At any rate, police dress up as Batman and Robin to catch a drug suspect. This is in the British... Well, it's a British thing, you know? Two policemen dressed as Batman and Robin captured a suspected drug offender in a bizarre sting operation. Now, what I was trying to say is that if it doesn't remain true to the story from where it, whence it came from the comics, whether it's Superman or whether it's Batman, whatever it is, it's garbage.
It's,
you know,
wrong.
It's somebody perverting the original. Mm-hmm. It would be like The Godfather with Pee Wee Herman. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. The dynamic duo, Sergeant Tony Smith and PC Mike Holman, pulled on the superhero outfits in a bid to unsettle the suspected baddies.
How are you spelling that?
They pretended to be drunks looking for a fancy dress party and knocked on the door of the suspect's home. Ah, those Brits. What did I tell you about them Brits? Those inside refused to answer the door to the loud, comically dressed visitors, which was what the officers wanted. What if two guys dressed up as Batman and Robin came knocking on your door? Batman and Robin then went around the back of the property in Weymouth, Dorset, while seven uniformed officers went to the front door. Those inside the house were pleased to see the policemen and complained to them about the fancy dress trunks. They then invited the officers in. Oh, the fancy dress drunks, not trunks. However, one of the men inside the house ran out of the back door on seeing the policemen to where the superheroes were waiting for him, right under their waiting arms. Batman, Sergeant Smith, gave chase, jumped over a fence, and biff, thou, pow, thwack, it says, arrested him. Isn't that cute?
Oh, that's cute.
PC Kevin Eames said the people opened the door immediately and said that they had been alarmed by some drunken people in fancy dress in their garden, so the ruse was successful and we were let in. Sergeant Smith added, last year police officers dressed up as carol singers, which also worked out well. This was my first costumed acting experience, he said. The Batman costume was quite comfortable and not too restricting. I still managed to jump over the fence. But it was difficult finding somewhere to put my CS spray. There was nowhere for the handcuffs, but then Batman doesn't need handcuffs. His CS spray. PC Holmes said the bad thing about the operation is that we had to endure hours of terrible puns from PC Holman. A man aged 22 has been arrested, charged with a drug offense. He's bailed to appear before Weymouth magistrates. There were no charges against two other men found at the property. Thanks God. Isn't that great? Leave it to them Brits, man, and silly ass Brits. Dressing up as Batman and Robin, really camp, and really...
gay.
Oh, that guaranteed. 1,152 votes on the poll. What's your take on these silly-ass polls we take on the show every day on our website, neilrogers.com? And 76.2%, 881 say they're fine.
Oh, we're fine.
Don't mess with success, so I'm not gonna posky around with it. And on days when I can't come up with a good idea, I'll just let you do it.
Oh, yeah. I'll have a great idea.
A make-believe son of the glorious nation of Kazakhstan continues to rule the American box office. Josh saw it this weekend, said it was hysterical, it was great.
Fabulous.
Sacha Baron Cohen's Borat, cultural learnings for America of make benefit glorious nation of Kazakhstan, took in $29 million to make the number one movie for the second straight weekend. distributor 20th Century Fox said yesterday. Borat raised its 10-day total to $67.8 million. The top three movies remained unchanged from last weekend, with Disney's The Santa Claus 3, The Escape Clause in second place with $16.9 million, and the Paramount DreamWorks animated tale flushed away in third with $16.7 million. By the way, DreamWorks, they made Matchpoint, which George saw this weekend and said it was
nice.
Great. He said it was great. Now, did you bring it in for Josh?
I did.
Did you?
I'm just pawing it right now.
You're holding it. Well,
I'm holding it right
now. The movie, too.
Uh-huh. Sony's Will Ferrell comedy, Stranger Than Fiction, debuted as the best of the weekend's newcomers, placing fourth with $14.1 million. Ferrell plays a meek tax auditor, suddenly able to hear the voice of a narrator, Emma Thompson, chronicling his life and impending death. While 20th Century Fox could crow about Borat, the studio's Russell Crowe Ridley Scott reunion, A Good Year, flopped, coming in number 10 with a mere $3.8 million. How do you like that? It flopped, A Good Year.
Nice.
It's not been such a good year after that, huh?
No.
So when the hell am I getting my copy of Borat Kazakhstan up your nose with a rubber hose? When am I getting that?
This one's actually worth waiting until it comes out on DVD as opposed to getting a cloudy, dark, shot-in-a-theater pirated version.
Oh.
Now, do you never go to the movies? Is that it?
The last movie I saw in a theater was Fahrenheit 9/11.
Okay.
Okay.
This one's worth going to.
That's a long time ago.
This one's worth walking to the theater and watching it with people laughing all around.
Won't do it.
All right.
I mean, when you got your Samsung 46-inch HD sitting there, you know. In fact, maybe it'll be out on HD when it comes out on DVD. Now, let me just ask you this question. I'm sure neither one of you knows the answer.
I'll make one up.
Although Josh has got that HD set and still hasn't had the decency to buy you one, which I can't believe.
No,
the big money he's making.
When I get my bonus.
Wow.
I'm holding my breath.
But anyway, because I'm really thinking about getting that DVD player, although, you know, there's the dilemma again, just like there was
with
VHS.
Right.
Is it going to be the beta? Is it going to be...
I've been seeing a lot of Blu-ray lately.
Yeah. Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the one that's going
to
win.
My question is, how much material is out? In other words, are all the new flicks that have been coming out in DVD now, are they coming out in HD? We would think, wouldn't you?
There's not much of a difference, though. Like, watching, like, TV high def is different than watching a movie high def.
Yes.
Because I've seen, you know, the HBO high def or whatever, the movies that have come in, they look the same to me.
And like I said, I think I'll save the money, okay? Why the hell do I want to do that just because I had another big day at Woodbine on Saturday? Can I give you a thumbnail sketch? I don't want to go into detail, okay? I had a good day.
Good.
But I start there on my favorite machine. I get there early in the morning, like about 8:30, when there's nobody there. And they're all pretty much open, you know, so I can go to my machine way down in the end that I usually play, and usually have, you know, good luck with or sometimes really bad luck, whatever. And I sat down and gave it a try, and, man, that thing was colder than a mackerel. And I thought, and I won one spin for $30, the pink 30, which to me is the kiss of death. If you get the pink 30, run away, folks. I'm Wheel of Fortune. So I got off of it. And I'm trying other machines, and a guy comes along. Now, you know the story. He gets, all kinds of spins, and he gets $2,000 on the line. And I'm thinking, oh, I better go home. It's going to be a – when that happens to you, and it happens to all of us, it's going to be a bad day. So I'm playing down at another machine down the way, and a young girl who always is there, she come up to me and said, boy, you picked the right machine today. This one was paying all day yesterday, the one I happened to be on, you know. And I play for another 2-3 minutes, and bada-bing, there's $3,000 on the line. Wasn't that nice?
That was nice.
I just mentioned that in passing. So I could afford to go out and get that Samsung.
Nice.
But I'm not going to do it. I'm going to save the money and say, George told me don't waste your money on crap.
The best talent. This is Neil
Rogers. Save it to you and leave it in your world.
Radio 560 UAM.
Who's going to give Ricky a blow?
Well, the bombs exploded with a mighty crash. And the hell died off their bones. Jersey Turk, towel heads, we got your Allah right here. You Arab dancers, go! Taliban on the run! Taliban on the run! They're on the land for Uncle Sam. They're searching everyone for Taliban on the run! Taliban on the run! Well, the bombs kept falling till their desert world began to crumble down. In the town, we're searching for them everywhere. Won't stop till the maiden's found. Taliban on the run. Taliban on the run. searching everyone for Taliban on the run. Taliban on the run. Taliban on the run. Taliban on the run.
Heck of a job, W. I got a story here about insurgent activity rising and all the dead people. But first, I just found this.
What?
U.S. radio company may sell for $18 billion.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
Not Beasley Broadcasting either.
No, we're not worth
that. That one sold for
$18. No.
Two consortiums of private equity firms were expected to submit. I used to say consortiums, but I don't think that's right.
Contortium.
Two contorted private equity firms expected to submit final auction bids today for the largest radio company in the U.S., Clear Channel Communications, Cheap Channel, worth about $18 billion, according to people involved in the auction. Bidders were making last-minute adjustments to their offers last night, these people be saying, after the deadline was moved from Friday to noon today. Oh, like half an hour ago. Offers were expected from a group that includes Providence Equity Partners, the Blackstone Group, and Kohlberg Kravis Roberts, and another that includes Bain Capital, Thomas H. Lee Partners, and the Texas Pacific Group. Other private equity suitors, including Apollo Corp Group and the Carlyle Group, and Cerberus Capital Management and Oak Hill Capital Partners, have expressed interest in making bids, but have since cooled to the auction. The Carlyle Group.
Mm-hmm.
The Providence-backed, the Providence-Blackstone KKR group had originally been expected to win the contest, having held discussions with Clear Channel much earlier than the others, but the rival offers are expected to be competitive, and they're going to be very aggressive, they'd be saying. Bids are expected in the mid-30s per share, people briefed on both bids said. In the last few weeks, Clear Channel shares have jumped in anticipation of a deal. Clear Channel shares closed on Friday at $34.97. It's unclear how much of a premium bidders will pay to that, yada, yada, yada. Well, how do you like that? Cheap Channel's going to be sold. Maybe the first thing they'll do is they'll fire Pete Bolger when they come in. The assassin. The assassin. People who have helped destroy this once great industry, man. This one great business. Just like I told you. Didn't I tell them on that
oh, yeah.
Ignominious day? 1,180 votes on the poll, by the way. We got 1,300 licked today. Not that that's such a big deal, but, you know, it's not bad. Yeah, and especially a poll on the polls. What's the big simus with that, right? That's what they're all
right.
complaining about. What's the big simus with this? Insurgent activity in Afghanistan has risen fourfold this year, and militants now launch more than 600 attacks a month. A rising wave of violence has resulted in 3,700 deaths in 2006. A bleak new report be saying. Afghanistan saw about 130 insurgent attacks a month last year, said the report by the Joint Coordination and Monitoring Board, which consists of representatives from Afghanistan and the international community, including the UN. The new report said insurgents were launching more than 600 attacks a month as of the end of September, up from 300 a month the end of March this year. The violence has killed more than 3,700 people this year, it said, but who's counting?
The battlefield. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Ready to move out.
Oh!
Now, they did make one Batman and Robin movie way, way back when the TV
yeah,
show was still on.
Possibly the worst of all of the movies, too.
Yes.
And
I mean, really
cheesy, gayest.
Really poorly done. Although they did have all the people in there. Burgess Meredith was in it, and Vincent Price, and who else
yeah.
was on it?
Oh, no, you're talking about the original movie. Yeah.
The one that was made on a cartoon.
Yeah, that was all right. It was very campy. Everyone was in it.
And
Frank Worthen is the Riddler.
Yvonne
DiCarlo. Wait, she was in the Munsters. Yvonne Craig.
Yvonne Craig was who?
Batgirl.
I thought that was Lee Meriwether.
The Catwoman was Lee Meriwether.
Oh, like I said, Frank Gorshin.
Mm-hmm. Riddler.
Cesar Romero.
Joker.
Julius Caesar.
Emperor.
Tony Blair, who narrowly defeated a recent parliamentary attempt to call an inquiry into the Iraq War, is facing a new threat from Washington, where victorious Democrats are expected to call British witnesses as they launch congressional investigations into the war. Tony Blair! Remember they sexed up the intelligence?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're the majority party. We can hold hearings, said a senior member of the staff of John Conyers, who in January will become chair of the House Judiciary Committee. We can hold any number of hearings, like maybe any number.
About 30, man.
30 a week. Democratic senators are also expected to seek hearings aimed at throwing light on how Downing Street and the White House coordinated efforts to claim that Saddam Hussein possessed those weapons of mass destruction. all the claims led to war, from allegations that Saddam was reconstituting a nuclear weapons program to his alleged links with al-Qaeda, could come under examination. Unlike their counterparts in Britain, congressional committees have the crucial power to subpoena witnesses and documents, unlike those silly-ass Brits who are busy dressing up as comic book characters. Mr. Conyers' staff have long been investigating how false information was presented by the Bush administration to persuade the public of the significant and growing threat allegedly posed by Saddam. Got him, Saddam. They got him. Their inquiries were partly triggered by the leaking of the Downing Street memos, which revealed the belief that the British government, Mr. Bush had decided on war as early as the spring of 2002. When Mr. Conyers published his findings last year, he said, "We found there's substantial evidence the president, the vice president, other high-ranking members of the Bush administration misled Congress and the American people regarding the decision to go to war in Iraq, misstated and manipulated intelligence information regarding the justification for such war, countenanced torture and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment in Iraq, and permitted inappropriate retaliation against critics of their administration." He called for Bush's censure, something the Democrats now have decided not to pursue, but any fresh investigation using subpoena powers is sure to put further pressure on the U.S. and British governments. Good. Excelente. What just came over the fax machine? Look at this. Look at the tiny print on it. You know, it's funny because I had this story in my pile and I Schmidt-canned it.
Oh.
Borat star Sacha Baron Cohen has been punched by a man who didn't like his jokes. Remember I said the story about the clothes I had?
Yeah.
Cohen approached the passerby in a New York street and said in the style of his Kazakh alter ego, "I like your clothings, are nice. Please, my line, I want to have sex with it." But the target of his joke failed to see the funny side and punched Cohen repeatedly in the face, according to the newspaper The Sun. Cohen had been on his way to a bar with British actor Hugh Laurie after the pair appeared on U.S. TV show Saturday Night Live. A friend said Sasha couldn't resist playing the fool as Borat, but picked on the wrong person. I guess this guy thought he was being attacked by some unstable individual and lashed out. Sasha's very lucky he didn't get a much worse beating. Cohen was said to be shaken up but didn't receive any lasting scars. This isn't the first time Americans have failed to get the Borat joke.
I can't imagine.
Two U.S. students who appeared in the Borat movie are suing Cohen, claiming they suffered mental anguish after they were filmmaking racist and sexist remarks. And we had that story on Friday. And there's another story. There's somebody else suing him. Where the hell is it? It's in my pile here somewhere. Maybe I didn't even... I'm sure I put it on our website. Didn't I, Josh?
Yes, you did. Well, you were the one about the village.
Yeah.
Not about the kids.
Yeah, well, no, that was earlier. Well, the village is suing them, too. But I'm not wasting my time with that on the show, you know. It's fine for our website, but not on this high-paid show. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
I'm sure that the movie is very funny, and I, you know, take both your word that it's really hysterical. And as soon as it's available on DVD, I'll steal a copy. I'll take your word for it. Haven't even watched American Dad yet. I better do that this afternoon.
I'll steal a copy for you, but I'm going to wait for it to come out on DVD to steal a good copy.
What, Borat?
Borat, yeah.
I don't need you to steal me a copy. I told you I had a big day at Woodbine Saturday.
Oh, that's right.
But it won't be out for a while. 1,191 votes on the poll, the only one that's important on here. What's your take on these polls? They're fine, 908. They suck, only 49, and get rid of them, only 49. And I think those people voted twice.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Holy Mackinac! This is Joe Bowen, the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you're listening to the Hockey Authority, Neil Gott.
Hi, I'm Florida Congressman Mark Foley. If you're a young man between the ages of 15 and 18, I'd like to talk to you about Foley's Friends Congressional Outreach Program. Foley's Friends is a program that gives teenage boys a hands-on approach to learning about government. They'll learn the nuts and the bolts of working intimately with a congressman's staff, followed by a thorough debriefing. Successful candidates will learn about politics, like running a campaign that's down in the polls. Imagine the thrill of bringing that poll back up again. So apply today, and using one hand, I'll email you all the details. Foley's Friends Congressional Youth Outreach Program. I promise to leave no teenagers behind.
All right.
There was a young man between 15 and 18. And when I watched that show, I thought to myself...
They call him Flipper, Flipper. Faster than light.
Mm.
No one you see.
Well, if Sandy would have quit running around naked, the whole show would have been a lot easier, you know. A lot less disturbing. 1247, you didn't watch Flipper?
Of course I did.
Everybody watched Flipper.
And especially when I lived down here. I mean, this was near and dear to our hearts.
It was?
Sure.
I'll tell you one thing. Sandy was near and dear to my heart. But then again, a battle is shaping up between Democrats and the White House over the Military Commissions Act signed into law last month by President George W. Bush. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont is expected to take over as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the California Daily Journal reports that Leahy is drafting a bill to undo portions of the new law in an effort to restore habeas corpus rights for enemy combatants. Thanks God. A spokeswoman for Leahy told the newspaper the bill would be intended to repeal portions of the law that prevent some detainees from pursuing federal court challenges to the government's authority to hold them indefinitely. Ad infinitum. Spokeswoman Terry Schmaler told the newspaper the goal is to try to do something to reverse the damage. Scott Silliman, director of the, or is that silly man, director of the Center for Law, Ethics, and National Security at Duke University School of Law, told the newspaper an attempt to amend the law could set up a partisan showdown in Congress and possibly a presidential veto. Civil rights attorneys filed a constitutional challenge to the act after Bush signed it October 17. Scott Silliman. What's your name? Silliman. I see. 510 votes. Speaking of silly man, there's John McCain with a big cheek.
Side Democratic Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold says a run for the White House is not in his future.
Yeah, Russ ain't running, okay? No Jewish president. Although I think Elliot Spitzer is going to run. I still think Barack Obama's got it. Isn't he Jewish?
Sure, whatever you say.
A small single-engine plane made a skidding crash landing onto a driveway southeast of the Lantana Airport in Palm Beach County this morning. The crash knocked out electricity in the area after the plane clipped several power lines and uprooted a pole. Thank God it wasn't our pool. No one was injured in the 11:15 a.m. emergency landing. Boy, that's like an hour and a half ago on the 6200 block of Pine Drive near Lantana Road, Circle Place, and Lake Osborne. Channel 5 reports the pilot escaped with only minor injuries and that he was the only person on board. The plane, with its wings shredded, almost completely sheared off, came to rest against a car and narrowly missed a nearby house. Channel 5 said pilot of the plane was attempting to make an emergency landing on a patch of grass, but missed the landing spot. He was aiming for the grass, but he seared his ass. Crashes under investigation. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a Makakowicz on there.
Establishment. They're still very suspicious of him, but...
John McCain, and they well ought to be, man. Phonier than a $47 bill. In fact, I hope he's the man. I hope he's the guy.
Sure.
Remember the way he cozied up to Bush? And of course, like they always say about him, he never met a war he didn't like.
Right.
Phony baloney, baby. Ersatz. And especially with that puffed-up cheek. Man, it's looking really bad. I think it's growing now. I think the cheek is, like, growing. We're like Hank's Puppet, it's growing. 1,215 votes on the poll for the poll watchers. There may be a few people out there who hate our polls like crazy, but you know what? The votes are growing like that thing on McCain's cheek. Oh, there's Mitt Romney from Massachusetts. He's got two chances, none and less than none. U.S. Representative Jim Gibbons, Republican of Nevada, was elected governor of Nevada last week, despite the allegations of late-night carousing and sexual assault involving a cocktail waitress three decades his junior. A new round of subpoenas suggests police may be looking at whether obstruction of justice occurred in the case. Local law enforcement investigating the allegations made by Chrissy Mazzeo has subpoenaed the phone records of all those in the Gibbons party on that fateful Friday the 13th of October. Man, Friday the 13th, according to the Vegas Sun. They say Metro Police have subpoenaed telephone records of Republican Governor-elect Jim Gibbons, political strategist Sig Rogic, and other witnesses in the investigation into allegations that Gibbons assaulted a woman and tried to force himself on her sexually. Home and cell phone records of everyone who was drinking with Gibbons and Kojic at McCormick and Schmick's restaurant before the October 13th alleged assault on Chrissy Mazzeo were among the records subpoenaed, sources close to the investigation told The Sun. It's not clear whether the phone records were subpoenaed as part of the investigation of Mazzeo's underlying assault claim or her later claim that she was pressured into keeping silent about the incident. You better stay mum, mum. Another possible area of interest for law enforcement is the security video from the parking garage where the incident's alleged to have happened, which went missing for several days before being turned over to police. Police plan another round of witness interviews, including the governor-elect himself. How do you like that? Wouldn't that be bad if the governor turns out to be a prevert? Like in California. He's more popular than ever now. The Gropinator.
What's up with that?
What do you mean, what's up with that? They like him in Hollywood, baby. They likes him.
I eat grapes. I'm a grape eater.
That's what they like about him. He's one of their people. They gravitate, whether it's Ronnie Reagan, whether it was a George Murphy 100 years ago in the Senate, they gravitate toward their own people. You know what I really hate? And I just noticed that I did this.
What?
When you print something out, and you know you get these pop-up thing, take a survey, or there's like a quick ad on it, mm-hmm. and you don't even realize it's in there, and you're printing it, and that shows up on the print job.
No.
No what?
No, it doesn't, for some of us that know how to print web content. We just lost him. One of these days.
I'll get it back. I'll print it again. How's that? Uh-huh. And it's very important because the two Andy Griffiths to meet in court. That important?
Oh, no.
Andy Griffith. Okay. I keep thinking he's dead. I don't know why. Maybe it's wishful thinking.
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, I don't want to see. I don't want to see that. Jesus, Andy Griffith at Amazon.com. I don't want to see that. That's another thing I hate when you do
buy all his books.
Oh, I don't want to buy his books or see his ugly face or talk to Jebediah. Like I said, it's not an important story. I'm not going to waste my time.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They don't care about it anyway. Do you care about it?
No. No, I saw it anyway.
Did you really?
Over the weekend.
Well, I'll be damned. The death threat came on simple white flyers blowing down the streets at dawn. A group calling itself Friends of Mohammed accused a local Palestinian Christian of selling mobile phones carrying offensive sketches of the Muslim prophet. The message went on to curse all Arab Christians and Paparazzi, the Nazi, still struggling to calm Muslim outrage from his remarks on Islam. And there's a picture of him here, he ain't looking too good. While neighbors defended the merchant, saying the charges in the flyer were bogus, the frightened phone dealer went into hiding, fleeing, feeling less than satisfied with authorities' conclusion that the October 19th was probably just a harmless rant. Harmless rant. Now the dealer is thinking of going abroad. Call it part of a modern exodus, the steady flight of the tiny Palestinian Christian minority that could lead, some predict, to the faith being virtually extinct in its birthplace within several generations, a trend mirrored in many dwindling pockets of Christianity across the Islamic world. When in doubt, root the goyim out. This is one of the major themes the Pope is expected to carry to Turkey for a four-day visit beginning November 28th, his first papal visit to a predominantly Muslim nation. The Vatican called it reciprocity. Muslim demands for greater sensitivity from the West must be accompanied by stronger protections and rights for Christian minorities, they'd be saying. In some places, such as Pakistan, it means more safeguards from extremist attacks. Oh, there's no extremists in Pakistan, are there?
Not that I've seen.
In Indonesia and elsewhere, it touches on appeals to quell growing sectarian clashes. Here we go again. Just like Elton John said, get rid of religion. Get rid of it. In Turkey, Iraq, and the rest of the Middle East, it seeks to preserve communities dating back to the time when Jesus and his apostles preached. But nearly everywhere... Oh, you know what I love on the Biography Channel? You'll turn on to see what they're doing, and Jesus Christ is on there, you know?
Jesus Christ.
Jesus. How do you do the biography of Jesus? How about his next-door neighbor, Shlomi Goldfarb? They live like two tenths down.
Yeah, they got a lot of info from Shlomi.
Oh, my God. But nearly everywhere in Muslim lands, Christian populations are in decline. No place is more striking than the Holy Land. For decades, it was mostly economic pressures pushing Palestinian Christians to emigrate using family ties in the West or contacts for missionary schools. The Palestinian uprising and the separation barrier started by Israel in 2002 accelerated the departures by turning once bustling pilgrimage sites such as Bethlehem into relative ghost towns. Oh, little town of Bethlehem. Can you hear it? Are we singing it now or what?
Well, you are.
Oh, yeah. There's the three wise men. The three wise men, all these other bubble mice, all these fairy tales, away in a manger with Yoshki and all this other. And it won't be very long now. It's almost Thanksgiving. And, of course, you're already starting to see the Christmas decorations. And they're talking about all the stars, not just Walmart, a lot of other stores. They brought Christmas back. And there was that William Donahue on over the weekend.
With his teeth fenced. Yeah, we're starting to make some progress. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the homeless voice bums are wearing their Christmas gear already.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. They get in my way. They'll only do it once.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Hey, this guy Burrell. And when I'm up in Boca Chica slapping old women with painted lips around the pool,
I listen to the Neil Rogers 1 to 2 hour.
I listen to the Neil Rogers Fair and Balance 1 to 2 hour.
Think you're caught and shoving. I ain't gonna work with him no more.
No.
I've had enough of all the primitive fairy tales and folklore. I'm getting tired of giving money away to all the Christian corporate whore.
Oi!
You can take your God and shove it. I ain't worshiping him no more.
Rectum!
Well, I was a Christian, soldier of God, believer all these years.
All that time I followed every word of the scriptures written by queers. Get your keys, say he's a powerful God, living on the wind in a mighty way. Except in 9/11 when he must have been gone on a busman's holiday. Take your God and shove it.
Wreck him.
I ain't gonna worship him no more. Shove it, you're alright. If you're with us, cause everybody else is wrong. And I'm getting tired of watching people die in the name of an invisible Lord. Take your God and shove it. I ain't worshiping him no more. Take your God and shove it. I ain't worshiping him no more.
So Cynthia Preston played Ursula in Pin, and she was on for 3 years on General Hospital. How do you like that?
I never watched that show.
What?
General Hospital.
Neither do I.
Luke and Laura.
Oh, Puke and Laura. Yeah, there was a real sex pot.
You fairy.
Well, we know that Jack Palance died over the weekend. We knew Ed Bradley died on Friday, or was it Thursday? Thursday.
Okay.
But there's somebody else that we didn't know who died over the weekend.
Who's that? One of the Four Tops?
No. Gerald LaVert.
Oh.
Not if you feel that you can't go on.
That's from, as you know, the movie Standing in the Shadows of Motown, and he was the one who sang that in the movie.
How do you like that? Pervert.
Rhymes with pervert. Anyway, I did find that story, in spite of all your shenanigans and all your castigations.
One of these days.
I think for an old fart like me, I do pretty well with this damn computer.
Well,
with all this stuff that I pump out. When
now that
we
got you using white people email, one more little step and you'll be up to date.
White people email, huh? Sound like some kind of a racially charged remark to me.
Maybe.
Andy Griffith, he was white. He was about as white as it gets, even pastier than you.
And his hair.
Andy Griffith, who played Matlock and Sheriff Andy Taylor, has sued a Wisconsin man also named Andy Griffith, according to the AP. The second Andy was born William Harold Fenrick, and changed his name to gain publicity in a campaign for sheriff in Wisconsin's Grant County. Griffith's lawsuit accused Griffith, of violating trademark and copyright laws, as well as the famous Griffith's privacy. Even worse, it says, the newer Andy ran third in the election. Any bets that his campaign manager was named Barney Fife? yuck.
Geez.
Yeah. So anyway, Gerald LaVert is dead. It's bad. So like I said, after you watch Pin this weekend, be sure to get Standing in the Shadows of Motown. And you'll thank us profusely if there's anybody out there who still hasn't seen that. I can't even begin to imagine that, you know? Even Josh liked it, and he's just a punk.
I mean, you have to like music.
Yeah.
You know, we're finding out
some people.
Some people
out there don't like music.
Music,
they don't like
movies.
They don't like food.
They don't like air. They don't like water.
They don't like us. They don't like the pool. They don't like themselves.
They don't like life.
They don't like their neighbors. They don't like strangers. Right.
Uranus.
Reverend Sun Myung Moon. I can understand that. 1240 on the dial. WGBA, Geneva, New York. Okay, we got 1240 votes. I said we'd make 13, didn't I? 1300, that's a nice number.
Yeah.
Fat-ass Governor Jeb Bush said Friday the unusually high number of voters who didn't choose any candidate in the congressional race in Sarasota County was investigating and said the state has the law in place to do it right. Oh, it's a good thing they got the law in place now, unlike in 2000 when they just couldn't get it all straightened out. Except, you know, one for Gore and three for Bush. This is obviously something we need to look into. And very quickly, Bush said, as state elections officials prepare to oversee an expected recount this week in the 13th district race between Republican Vern Buchanan and Democrat Christine Jennings. Jennings was behind in the initial count by 373 votes and pressing for answers about why more than 18,000 voters didn't register any selection in the race but did make choices in the other contest. That rate was much higher than what the district's other counties registered in the same congressional race. State elections officials plan to audit the Sarasota County's election system after the recount, which is going to happen this week. The county uses touchscreen machines, which are meant to avoid some of the problems Florida saw in 2000. Bush said there were clearly questions about the vote, but said the state system is equipped to handle those questions. Right. We had a long place to do it right, he said during a stop in Bradenton. Good place for him, by the way. In 2000, when a recount took place, the canvassing board had all this flexibility. Now the law is the law, and that takes away much of the mystery, he said. The problem is, how are there significant undervotes like that? It may be that simply the voters wish, but if there's evidence to suggest otherwise, we'll move on that, he said. He'll do a bowel movement on it. That's what your fat-ass governor said. And with an ass that size, it ought to be quite a hefty movement, man. It ought to be a very substantial movement. What a piece of... And it just kills me. I just don't understand what it is about him that people like. Can you explain it to me?
You mean that 31%?
No, I'm talking about your fat-ass governor, not
that Bush. That Bush.
That make him... They're always saying, the wildly popular Jeb Bush. Well, and, of course, now they're even touting him to run in 2008.
The Yehus like him because he's a Yehu, and the Spicks like him because he peeky bonnie.
Oh, I see. Is that it?
Yeah.
And the drug people like him because his daughter Noelle is
a crackhead,
Rip Snorton, a crackhead. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the smugglers like him because his wife's a smuggler.
Right, Columba.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Columba. Didn't we just have Columba Day not long ago? Boy, I sure haven't played this in a long time.
Hello, suckers. My name is Columba. I got off the plane after shopping in France to dish your money away. I bought designer clothes, expensive baubles and jewels, and knew in advance a duty tax was due. I tried very hard to smuggle, and they wouldn't let me buy. But I did not get in trouble, 'cause I'm the governor's wife. Yes, I'm just obedient wife who wants to live up my life with special favors. After all, my husband, brother, will soon be your dictator. I'm like Florida Zabita, I buy anything I need and just one thing more. I'll beat your Christian family values when I get back from the store.
You could get more.
Ha, ha, ha!
All right.
Well, he's a Tallahassee Nazi.
Woo!
Who got the money from his daddy.
Woo!
An anti-Semite little bratty.
Woo!
With an agenda that's crappy.
Woo!
Well, he's a Tallahassee Nazi. No, but AFLA. Well, he's a presidential son who doesn't have to run. No one else is gonna win. He might as well just move right in.
Sieg Heil. Sieg Heil.
He has a golden spoon. He was born with a pizzazz. So look out, all you Jews.
Woo!
Get ready for the gas. He's a Tallahassee Nazi.
Oy.
He'll give our civil rights a whammy.
Woo!
'Cause he's a Tallahassee Nazi. Love of FLA. Well, he's a very wealthy dude with very fatty views who never paid his dues. By next year, we'll all be screwed.
Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil.
Any schmuck could win that race against Buddy McKay. Why do you think they call it Goober? Victorial anyway. He's a Tallahassee Nazi.
Woo!
He'll make the KKK happy.
Woo!
Yeah, he's a Tallahassee Nazi. Love of FLA. Come on, let's two-step. Come on, Adolf. Let's go for that.
Anyway, like I said, he's dead. I just want to print out the story. R&B star Gerald LaVert has died at his home in Cleveland. He was 40. All of us at Atlantic are shocked and deeply saddened by his untimely death. He was one of the greatest voices of our time, who sang with unmatched soulfulness and power, as well as a tremendously gifted composer and an accomplished producer, stemming from his record label, Atlantic Records, be saying. No further details were given how he died. He first achieved fame in 1986 as a member of the R&B trio LaVert, which also included his brother Sean and friend Mark Gordon. He died in Cleveland. He was 40, okay? Somewhere out there in Cleveland, Ohio, somebody knows the trouble we've seen. He leaves behind four children, by the way. He's dead.
Okay.
Anything we need to find a little bit more than that?
Sure. Somebody knows who's responsible for this.
Somebody knows who's responsible for this.
You know who knows what's
But he was no football player, see, so probably that's why nobody cares. I just, that whole thing leaves me just, I can't even describe it. I can't put it into words.
Limp?
Limp didn't even come close to it. Just almost speechless. Shocked. Shocked. By the way, the Hurricanes lost again, 14-13 to Virginia. Made a nice comeback there at the end. Look how they're going to pull it out. To Maryland, excuse me. They already lost to Virginia. Who'd they lose to?
Virginia Tech.
Now let me see. They got any more games they could lose this season? How many more games they got? Can't have that many.
Boston College.
Oh, they're going to lose that game. BC is going to kick some serious non-Catholic ass. You mark my words. The Pope's got the fixerazzi in on that game. 1,249 votes on the poll. We got 1,300 licked today. Everything is sweet, as somebody I know would say. Sweet, really. I was thinking also when I was taking a shower this morning about when they put Stern on here, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, luckily I'm in the shower so nobody can hear, but I like to start screaming. Now, not screaming real loud, but just like, you know, blurting out. Like, you idiots. What was it? Yeah, like that. How about that? But one thing about these people, you know, now, I will say this for Joe Bell. You had lunch with him, and you told him about that one. That's the only thing.
Sure.
I got nothing else on my plate.
And I told him that. I said, that's the only thing that's really grinding our grip.
Besides
right
the fact
now.
The sales department sucks and they don't give us any copy. But
I told him
that's never going to change anywhere.
Anymore,
nothing he can
right.
do about that. He's not going to wave a magic wand and say, hey, guess what? All of a sudden, the sales department is competent.
I told him you said Manishtanach Halal Hazeh about that.
Yeah, that's what
or
I said. Cornish
Halal Hazeh, both of them. Yeah.
What?
See.
But at any rate, so we got that all straightened out, which is good. See, that's a sign that here's a guy that responds in a positive fashion, in a proactive way, whatever the hell that means, but everybody says it. Mm-hmm. We're proactively, sticking our nose up your ass.
Isn't that for acne?
Right. Squeeze it. But in the meantime, before we had a guy, it was like, and of course, the Joyce factor, too. Don't forget, she was also involved in some of those decisions, and she waltzes away scot-free, you know? Well, she's busy sticking her nose into all of our crap.
Yeah.
The biggest Take a good will, Joyce, okay? Hope it clears your guts out. Hope it burns your nostrils.
Neil Rogers.
God.
I'm dying over here.
The other night, was there a fight on the 4th of July? Because now his cousin's dead, a bullet in the head. What happened? We don't know. Something fishy smells, but he won't tell. So we'll ask Brian, what did you do? Brian, what did you do? Seems not so long. He was standing on his folks' lawn, and he was crying, 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 crying. It's hard to understand. It was an accident with two shots flying. I don't know why. Your agent Drew claims the cop's reports aren't true. I want to know some more, so tell me what's the score. Brian, what did you do accidentally? Or just maybe you're lying? What did you do? What did you do? Yes, now he's gone. And from this moment on, we're asking Brian, 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 yeah, Brian. What did
119, I got a little more of the inside story here because I thought that other thing was pretty superficial. Give it like a lick and a schmear.
Okay.
Gerald Levert, the R&B singer, songwriter, and producer, died of a heart attack around 2:30 Friday afternoon. Gerald Levert was the son of Eddie Levert of the soul group The OJs. Did you know that?
I do know.
He just finished up a tour in Africa, apparently on the ride home from the airport. He suffered a heart attack, and he was big and fat. And, you know, the good people are the fat people, and the fat people are the...
dead people?
Right. Gerald's former publicist, Lisa Jefferson, said he was incredibly close to his father. They performed together and recorded together, Jefferson said. Gerald is a mini Eddie Levert. He sounded just like his dad. It's a horrible loss, she said. A spokesman for the Oda Levert said she expected to have a statement sometime while we're still alive. Gerald Levert's dead of a heart attack. He was big and fat. He had a great voice. He was only 40 years old. All you fat people out there, put down the fork and the spoon and the knife and the pizza and the cake and the pasta.
I'm dying out of here.
He was great. But anyway, he's dead. How's Ben Harper doing?
How's he doing what?
Probably still recording that awful music of his own.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad. What a shame.
Is it?
How's Joan Osborne doing?
She's doing fine. Just spoke to her this morning.
Oh. I might just have to watch that again this week. I probably only watched that about 50 times because it keeps popping up on the cable, you know. And every now and then, if I get just in the right mood, I'll pop the DVD in there and just play it.
Joan Osborne.
Democratic lawmakers will seek a phased withdrawal from Iraq. Democrats poised to take control of Congress said yesterday that they would press to begin a phased U.S. military withdrawal from Iraq within 4 to 6 months, part of an agenda aimed at overhauling key aspects of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East. First order of business is to change the direction of Iraq policy, said Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, who had his bifocals all the way down to the very tippy of his nose.
His what?
His tippy, who's in line to become chairman of the Senate Armed Services. Believe me, he ain't got no foreskin, okay? Trust me. He's in line to become chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee next year when Democrats become the majority party in both chambers of Congress. You don't find any guy named Levin or Levin that's got foreskin, okay? Ask Oscar Levant. He'll tell you.
Well, maybe the ready missed one.
Senior White House officials have countered that setting timetables for U.S. troop withdrawals would weaken the Iraq government and embolden insurgents, but they acknowledged the need for fresh ideas on Iraq and expressed a new willingness to negotiate with Democrats on an array of foreign policy issues. White House Chief of Staff, the unctuous Josh Bolton, indicated that the president would block legislation calling for a scheduled withdrawal. I don't think we're going to be receptive to the notion that there's a fixed timetable at which we automatically pull out, because that could be a true disaster for the Iraqi people, Bolton said on this week's on ABC's This Week. Even so, he added, the White House is willing to talk about anything and is prepared to adjust tactics. Right. It took the election to convince them that maybe we need to not stay the course. You know, whatever the opposite is, stay the course. That's what we need to do. The opposite. The developments came as Bush and members of his national security team prepared to meet today with a panel of foreign policy experts who've been charged with developing proposals for how to proceed in Iraq. The panel is headed by James Baker III, who served as Secretary of State when Bush's father was president, and Lee Hamilton, former Democratic congressman and chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. You know, it's interesting that James Baker's in all these stories, and yet they never make any mention of the fact that he was the lawyer for the Bush people in 2000. Remember, he came down to Florida?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he was in charge of making sure that the fix was in, I mean, that the votes didn't get counted?
Right.
And then also he turned out to be the attorney for the Saudi royal family after 9/11. You remember that?
Uh-huh. I do.
Wow. Just a coincidence, you understand.
You're not supposed to be mentioning that.
The fact that the Bushes and the Bin Ladens are bunk buddies in our business together, and that they call Bandar, Bandar Bush, that's just a coincidence, you understand.
Of course it is. Commie.
Yeah. The Saudis, man. The Saudis and the Pakis. That's where we need to be taking some serious action, baby. I'd be rolling those tanks right through the deserts of Saudi Arabia, sticking the long American right up to them oil fields and telling those ragheads, out, get out. Get out while you still got time before we start taking you out. And we don't mean for dinner either. Not for falafel. Not for takeout falafel.
Not for a falafel long time.
557 votes in the poll. Better keep pushing on it. If we don't get 1,300, we can't leave. even though they won't put us on the air. But we just got to sit and continue pretending to be doing a show until they tell us not to.
Okay.
That's what I'm hearing. The seismic shift that midterm elections brought to Washington's political landscape was welcomed by many yesterday who opposed the war by last week, who opposed the war in Iraq and the harsh methods the Bush administration has employed in fighting terrorism. From Paris to Pakistan, politicians, analysts, and ordinary citizens said they hoped the Democratic takeover of the House would force President Bush to adopt a more conciliatory approach to global crises and teach a president many people see as a cowboy a lesson in humility. But some also expressed fears that a split in power and lame duck president might stall global trade talks and weaken much-needed American influence. On Iraq, some feared the Democrats will force a too rapid retreat, leaving that country and the region in chaos. Others said they doubted the turnover in congressional power would have a dramatic impact on Iraq policy anytime soon, largely because the Democrats have yet to define the specifics. Well, we just got through reading a story about 4 to 6 months, which is about as specific as they got. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq said American policy would not dramatically change despite the Democratic election success. Zalmay Khalilzad. The president is the architect of U.S. foreign policy, he said in a videotape distributed by the U.S. embassy. He's the commander-in-chief of our armed forces. He understands what's at stake in Iraq. He understands the stakes, and he likes it medium well. He's ordering ribs. Remember that thing in the Fahrenheit 9/11? He was fixing up dinner at the Rib Shack or whatever the hell it was there in Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
He's fixing to have some ribs. Good old country boy with that big 10-gallon hat. Phony is a $2.5 bill. That whole Bush family, man. Texas, my ass. They're from Texas like Hillary's from New York. That bitch. She ain't saying too much these days.
Good.
That's all she did make that one speech. I thought she did a fine job, by the way.
Don't matter.
She's no Barack Obama, I'll tell
you
that. He's got her lasso. The only one, there's one thing she's got, no, two things she's got that he ain't got. Well, I mean, I'm sure that she's got more than that he ain't got.
Besides
I hope so.
White skin.
Right. One of them is the Clinton name, and the other thing is money, and I mean lots of it.
The biggest names, the best talent. This is Neil Rogers, Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Is a Buffalo Bill.
If Scott had a bomb and took a hit, then would he act like Cheech and Chong and get the munchies and make brownies filled with hash?
Yes.
And would he share it with Jesus and the saints, those pious potheads? And yeah, yeah, pot is great. And yeah, yeah, pot is good. And yeah. What if God smoked cannabis? Smoking pot like one of us. Getting high on the back of the bus. Just him and Moses getting stoned. On a greyhound bus to Rome to get some Vatican homegrown, a couple dime bags to take home.
Absolutely.
Smoked a big Bob Marley on his throne. No fun in heaven unless you're.
So how about a bumper sticker that says WWJS, what would Jesus smoke?
Oh, hash.
132, maybe that's what he would eat.
The good stuff.
Maybe hash browns. The man arrested on Saturday for sending more than a dozen envelopes containing fake anthrax to anti-war celebrities, journalists, and politicians may have ties to the conservative super site Free Republic, according to Raw Story. You know, FreeRepublic.com, like Newsmax.com.
Freep Republic,
Freak. Chad Castagana, a 39-year-old California name, is the FBI's prime suspect in the case, is due in U.S. District Court in L.A. today, where prosecutors are expected to file a criminal complaint against him for sending threatening letters through the U.S. mail. Castagana has an extensive online history, often writing about science fiction and conservative politics, and many bloggers are convinced that he's also a contributor at the conservative activist Free Republic website under the name Mark Costanzo. earlier today, users at the liberal websites Democratic Underground and Daily Cause brought to light the similarities between Castagana's internet footprint and Costanza's writings at Free Republic, and Ross Story has found a series of eyebrow-raising connections between the two men. In one Free Republic post, Costanzo contends that he hails from the town of Woodlands Hills, the same city where Castagana was arrested. Sorry I was so late in replying, but this room where I'm working online from is a scorcher in the afternoon, Costanza wrote in July of this year. Temperatures were 160 degrees in the shade this Saturday here in Woodland Hills. Liberal bloggers noticed the possible connection after doing a Google search on writings by Castagana. Google. In a letter posted to the website of the magazine Science Fiction Weekly at the time of their August 26, 2002 issue, Castagana wrote, "The future is not the current events of our world thrown into outer space. The future is not with the liberals, not with the multiculturalists, both hate America, and is certainly not to be found in Canada. The future is not written. The future is unformed." Nearly 4 years later, the following passage was written by Mark Costanza, Free Republic. "Let us create a future of infinite possibilities devoted to the agenda of the social engineers who work their corruption on us through the one-way world of television. A world where anything is possible, but not everything is possible. Anything can happen, but not all things can happen at once. That is what time is for, to keep all things from happening at the same moment. That shall be the only rule of our new fantasy world, that an event only happens once. What has been done cannot be undone. There's no turning back the sands of time. You can review the past, but you cannot change the past. The vision of a possible future to the present must be taken in the context of the present. A cosmos not governed by compassion or tolerance or equality, but common sense and merit. A universe of strange and totally new life forms, and not distorted reflections of human characters, just to make some social allegory. That is the insipid barren road of political correctness that sci-fi entertainment has been a slave to us for so many years. The future is not the current events of our world thrown into outer space. The future is not with the liberals, not with the multiculturalists, both hate America, and is certainly not to be found in some cheapo TV production made in Canada. The future is not written. The future is unformed." Sound familiar to what I read like a minute ago? The similarities implicate Costanzo in at the least plagiarism of the anthrax host suspect, but there are other points of contact between the two men. Most striking is this Costanzo comment from September, weeks before the anti-Bush MSNBC anchor Keith Olbermann was sent a threatening fake anthrax letter in New York. "This partisan loudmouth Olbermann is a demagogue. Someone should find out where he lives and mail him a Ted Kaczynski letter," he wrote. After Olbermann received the fake anthrax, Costanzo posted the following. "Not to make light of the situation, but drama queen Olbermann put on quite a production even after he'd been told the powder was harmless and checked out by doctors and told he was fine. He demanded that he be rushed to the hospital for more tests. I wouldn't even be remotely surprised if he mailed it to himself. I've never seen someone more desperate for attention and approval. I heard from a liberal blog that Olbermann was a prima donna at the hospital, giving the medical staff and the cops a hard time. Keith is a whiny little bitch. Accepting that, I do not believe he sent it to himself, but that's just guesswork." A few weeks later, after fake anthrax was sent to New York offices of Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, Costanzo wrote, "Hold it here. Now, what are the facts? The links provide a few details. This info is very sketchy." And when the Washington Post recently received a piece of mail with suspicious white powder, Costanzo commented, "I heard recently that the Washington Post got interrupted briefly the other day because of a suspicious letter. I read about this at wonket.com. They said that the letter only contained harmless powder of boric acid." Costanzo's profile at Free Republic reads in part, "I have an associate's degree in the science of electronics. Castagana's web history indicates an extensive interest in technological gadgets and understanding of electronics." A blogger with Daily Cost claims to have uncovered other aliases as well. How do you like that? Free Republic. Not that they're a bunch of wing nuts, you understand. Yeah, not that they're a bunch of right-wing nut jobs, just like the people on Newsmax.com who are, certifiable and need to be in a rubber room. So the rest of us might be safe. 1,290 votes on the poll. We're damn near 1,300. How do you like that?
Okay.
What a day. And Josh is going to take home that movie Match Point and be treated like a really awesome. And you agreed with me the ending was fabulous.
It was.
Totally unexpected.
And, they fooled me. I thought I had it figured out, but they tricked me. They surprised me.
You thought you had it figured out?
Yes, I did.
Oh.
Well, I won't watch it tonight, but maybe tomorrow, and I'll get back to you.
What, you're going to be watching that football game tonight?
Yeah, but I'm also...
Nothing could be finer than get beat up by Carolina, and who the hell am I to call?
Yeah!
That would be bad. Don't be watching the Bucks in Carolina. You probably got more important fish to fry, including at least 200-300 stories I'm going to be sending. Now that this Outlook Express, you can blame George for it.
No time.
Just touch of one key and boom, man. They're like... just sent off in outer space like in a one shake of a horse's ass. Unbelievable. 1,292 on the pool. What's your take on these polls? They're fine, 980, 76%. You know what that convinces me?
What?
They're fine. That's what that convinces
me.
That's
fine. The biggest names, the best talent.
Don't mess with success, baby.
Rogers, Sports Radio 560, issue AM.
Disgusting program. I urge everyone to complain to this station.
Hello, Jenny. I just lost 15 pounds. Just 75 to go.
Christine Alley.
How'd you know it was me? Did you call ID?
Better put that fettuccine down.
And it went rollatini and lasagna.
Christine Alley, baby.
When am I getting my dessert?
Doing Jenny Craig, cause you're big and round.
I like to consider myself pleasantly plump.
You're still pretty in your lame Brian shirt. And you're damn sexy in your triple X big hoop skirt.
It's actually not a hoop skirt. It's plump fitting. Sexy, isn't it?
All she wants to do is have a hit TV show. Go, Kirstie, go.
Fettuccine.
Cookie dough.
Like a giant angel out through the snow. Go, Christy, go.
Angel bookcase.
Girl, we're rooting for you. We don't care how much you grow. Go, Christy, go.
Go.
Who cares if you're big as a chateau? You're still pretty, girl, and you got that all over sex.
Oh, yeah, she glows. I mean, blows. Anyway, she's a Scientologist, too, Kirstie Alley. Not only is she fat and disgusting, but also probably a closet case.
Yeah, she's wackety-whack.
144, 1602 at 560 WQM. And this show has just zoomed along today, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Has it really?
It's all good. It's good Monday.
Monday. Now, what do we got today? We got the Panther game tonight. I haven't even mentioned this. After the Humper's on 4 o'clock, of course, to 5 is the Power Hour with Humper and the Mad Dog together. And then you got Humper 5 to 7, Panther preview at 7 o'clock, Panthers and the Washington Capitals at 7:30. Ought to be a spectacular crowd for that game, followed by the Eddie Kay Show. Panthers are a little off their feed, and they're not that good. 13 out of 1 votes on the poll. We got 13 plus. That's all you need to know. Eric Margolis writes in the Toronto Sun, the future is made in China. Is everything made in China?
It is now.
While American voters were finally giving President Bush and the Southern Fried Republican Party a richly deserved, long-overdue drubbing last week, I was off in China, Eric says, observing a nation that, while rigidly authoritarian, is at least governed by capable, intelligent people, rather than the bungling politicians and crackpot ideologues that have run America onto the rocks. Here in Beijing, for my umpteenth visit since 1975, I've seen the future, and it still says, made in China. This gigantic metropolis of 25 million seemed destined to become the world's new capital city, provided China's economy, still surging at over 10% a year, remains strong and political stability continues. Beijing's massive new skyscrapers, huge government blocks, broad traffic-clogged avenues, and miasma of smog and dust give it the look of an imperial capital in a science fiction film. A miasma of smog and dust. Last week, Beijing staged a grandiose summit for 48 African leaders who received $10 billion in aid from China's new leader, President Hu Jintao. Energy-voracious China now gets 30% of its oil from Africa. Angola just passed Saudi Arabia as Chinese leading oil supplier. China's bent on securing the lion's share of Africa's suppliers of oil and other strategic resources. China-Africa trade has surged 30% to $50 billion in 2003. China's non-interference policy means its trade and aid come without strings, a major plus for authoritarian African regimes. At least China's not hypocritical. While Washington boycotts Sudan and Zimbabwe over human rights, it cozies up to other major violators like Egypt, Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia. The summit was a lavish spectacle with convoys of bigwigs and limousines racing down the avenues, dancers, drummers, acrobats, small armies of tough security details, and regiments of China's feared paramilitary police scowling at everyone. China announced a third-quarter trade surplus of $102 billion U.S. Beijing's monetary reserves have finally topped $1 trillion U.S., surpassing the former cash king, Japan. Beijing continues to finance America's spending binge by lending it billions. China's mammoth trade surplus and a rising flood of foreign investment has swamped the nation's banks with cash. Just like Georgia's bank account, it's swamped with cash.
Yeah.
This, in turn, has fueled indiscriminate speculative investments, especially in real estate, and a gold rush frenzy that often obscures China's solid economic development. This flood of hot money poses a serious danger. Indiscriminate investment leads to overproduction, which then causes a deflationary crisis that could end in financial meltdown. Japan experienced similar phenomena in the 90s. China's government has been struggling without much success to restrain this investment dragon. Beijing refuses, however, to allow its controlled, seriously undervalued currency, the yuan, to float as its trade partners demand. As in, what yuan? The undervalued yuan has given China its huge surplus, the motor of growth that has pulled the nation out of poverty. China still needs to deal with hundreds of millions of struggling farmers, state industry workers, and unemployed, so refuses to allow the yuan to winch up by more than 5%. If yuan were allowed to float, say Chinese bankers, people would rush to convert to dollars, causing a dire financial crisis. Anyway, argue Chinese officials, why should China pay the price for America's profligacy in refusing to save and running huge government deficits by revaluing the yuan? The U.S. Treasury is printing too much money in order to keep America's debt-ridden economy growing. Since 60% of all U.S. dollars end up abroad, the Bush administration's reckless spending and overstimulative money policies have caused a dangerous worldwide cash flood and serious imbalances to the global economy. U.S. Republicans would do well to take pointers on capitalism from China's communists who have beaten the Western devils at their own game. What you on? Drugs?
What are you on?
1,304 votes on the poll. And like I said, we don't have any problem with the polls, just doing it. Just coming up with one.
Right.
With Yuan. Oh, there's your girlfriend, Hillary.
Governor Ed Rendell, who I would love to see on any ballot as far as I'm concerned. But I think the American people are like me. I think they really do favor governors, people who have executive experience, people who run something, created jobs.
Yeah, run this. Run for your life. What's your take on these polls? That's our poll question today. 1,304 votes on there. It's not too shabby. They're fine, 989, almost 76%. See, since I said we have over 76%, that's when they started, voting for other things, just to piss me off.
Right.
Like, I really care. They're fine, 989, 75.8%. Once a week is good, 136. Yeah, I think George could come up with a good poll suggestion once a week. And where's the news? Wouldn't you think with this poll that we got today, since it's about the poll, wouldn't you think that Sean would have faxed us in a whole bunch of new stuff? Has anybody faxed any poll ideas today? No.
No.
If they have, you didn't send them.
No.
You're sitting on them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sitting on
them.
It
wouldn't surprise me that, my next vacation, and you're probably sitting on a whole pile of stuff, you know.
That's it. You see right through me.
Is he sitting on them, Josh?
Yes, he is.
They're
Josh
under the
said you
door.
Look about 6 foot two because you're sitting on that huge pile. Yeah, I bet you it's a pile over if it's not polls. I hate this poll, 67.5%, which, you know, what are you going to do? They suck. The polls suck, 59, and get rid of them, 54. That negatory, 8.6%. That's not really too big on negatory compared to what we usually get with these people. Now, here's my poll for tomorrow. I usually don't do this, but I want to make sure that once we get it started, I don't leave anybody obvious out. And I was inspired, like I said, by that article I read about Dog the Bounty Hunter and his crack problem. Who's the biggest phony of them all?
Oh, very good.
Here's my short list. Maybe not that short. Rush Limbaugh, Reverend Ted Haggard, Bill O'Reilly, Mark Foley, Dr. Phil, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Oprah, Jeb Bush, or I hate this poll.
All right.
You know, Jeb Bush with the family values and his dysfunctional family
that's
and his, that stuff. All his goody two shoes, religious of BS. Anybody I left out?
Well, the president, but if you put him on there, you know, everybody will vote for him.
Yeah, no, we don't want to put El Presidente on all these polls because that's easy.
Yeah.
That's like swatting flies off your ass, you know? Anybody can do that with their tail. I think I got a pretty good list there.
That's a damn good list.
Biggest phony of them all. Rush, of course, with his pill popping. All you drug people belong behind bars. You're all a danger to society. Yeah, right. Reverend Ted Haggard, who, of course, goes without saying.
You fairy.
Gay. Bill O'Reilly. The heavy breathing Bill O'Reilly. Mark Foley, which we all know about her. Dr. Phil, not just, I think I might have to vote for him, although Oprah created him.
Right.
Dog the Bounty Hunter, always castigating everybody with BS about he shouldn't be doing drugs and shouldn't be doing this and being such a goody two-shoes. In the meantime, he's a alleged crack smoking nut job. Oprah goes with a, I just get angry when I see her. There aren't too many people I get angry when I see them.
Really?
Your president is one of them, and
Oprah,
she is another one. I'm just pissed off. I mean, I don't begrudge anybody anything, but she's like not just making billions of dollars with a B, but she's like legendary. The women of the country, like
right.
if she says go out and fart in somebody's face, they're all out there squatting, man.
They're on their way now.
No matter what the hell it is. Oh, well, here's Oprah's vocalist, and here's Oprah's this, and Oprah's that, and Steadman. Now, yeah, who cares? Who the hell would touch that cow? Jeb Bush we got on there, which I think he won't get a lot of votes. You'll see. He's wildly popular. That's what they always say about him. He is wildly popular in Florida. You don't think there's a lot of stupid people in Florida, do you?
Yes.
Of course, they just elected their first
gay
that we know of, and they don't know nothing about it. They don't know nothing. Anyway, it's 153 at QM. The Dolphins, who do the Dolphins play next week, Josh? Who do the Patriots play? The Bucs will lose in Carolina tonight. Nothing could be finer than a loss in Carolina.
Hey, if the Dolphins can win, I got hope, man.
Yeah, that's right. There's hope for just about anybody.
The biggest names. The
don't squish the fish, man. They're on fire. 10-6, you can smell it.
Radio 560.
That stinks.
It's day in Miami town at 560 WQAM.
You're free, and freedom is beautiful. And, you know, it'll take time to restore chaos. But we will.
Something stinks inside our house. Time to kick those bastards out. Throw a shot out on our lawn. Kick them out before freedom's gone. Let's kick them out before freedom's gone.
Bye.